Everybody, it's Week of Mug Recap here on December 23rd, 2015, Christmas Eve Eve. I'm Myrot, and the dancy guy over there is Chris.
I'm not dancing anymore, so now nobody knows who you're talking about.
The formerly dancing guy over there is Rillo T. Chris, how is it doing, man?
I'm a little bit ill, Nick. I didn't tell you before the show. I thought I'd sandbag you. I'm viciously ill. May not be able to do the podcast. So actually, this guy's, I'm just coming in real quick. Have fun with Nick. I'm gonna lay down in bed. And I don't turn my webcam off. I literally just lay down in my bed here and just sleep while you do the podcast. Occasionally, like, turning my head over to be like, you got that wrong. Or just to make some gay joke or something like that. Like, balls. No, I actually am a little bit ill. And I feel like anytime I get sick, it's really like a snowball going down the hill. Like, things just kind of get worse and worse from there. It's like, I got sick, woke up late, had to catch a later bus. I'm like, all right, well, this one, I'm already going to be late for work, but at least this one will catch me in right when the last transfer bus would go over so I can get in at a reasonable time. And, like, I get on the bus. I know I shouldn't be angry. It's, like, the holiday season. But, like, every delay humanly possible came up. And the one that got to me that I really feel like a real shit about for being so angry was a mother came on with her baby in like a stroller and took like 5 minutes to like, because the bus is packed, so like she's trying to like situate herself in the bus with her baby. And I'm just like, just fucking throw it out the window. I have to get down. I'm going to miss the transfer. What are you doing? Why aren't you throwing your baby away to make up for the fact that I wasn't responsible enough this morning? Fuck you! Like, I felt so due for everyone to stop inconveniencing me, and ultimately, I missed that bus, was in super late, it wasn't a great morning.
But impatience is, like, the greatest of all, like, possible things that will infuriate a human being. Like, needing to get somewhere and not being able to get there will make a person feel horrible, murderous thoughts. Or at least it does to me.
Well, you're sadistic in that way.
Nothing gets me riled up more than being stuck in traffic, honestly. Like, I just, like, people who have ridden with me have observed me just, like, getting antsy in the car and stuff because I'm, like, just trying to get somewhere and I can't get there. And it's like, I could just be doing something else my time. Because you can't do anything when you're stuck in a car. Like, what do you do?
I listen to podcasts. And then I'm like, it's like my usual routine, I guess. Like, I'm listening to podcasts, something like that.
Yeah, I gotta be doing something, though. Even if it's, like, nothing, like, important. I just have to do something to, like, occupy my attention.
Like, flip quarters at your car at people or something like that? That's technically...
Even that, like...
You know, it's like, take this, my tank! Like, ow, my baby's face! And you're like, ha-ha, Nick strikes again. The quartermaster!
Old-timey Nick flicks quarters at small and innocent children. Yes.
You're like, take this, patink! And then you duck down underneath the window like they can't see you, like just occasionally peeking up.
Take the false mustache off. Some awful cretin did that.
Yeah. You're like, wait for your... this used to be a thing my brother would do back in the day. I don't know if you remember, Nick. I was super fat for a while.
And, I remember.
When I was that big, I used to just wear a Giants jersey around everywhere. Like, that was like... It was one of the few things that fit me.
So Brandon Jacobs jersey, yeah.
Brandon Jacobs, and eventually that got so fucking faded out and hideous, I had to switch to another one. It was like a real system for a while. And what my brother used to do is we used to like drive past people, and like if we'd see an attractive woman, he'd roll down the window and be like, "Nice tits, go Giants!" So they'd look into the car, and they'd just see me wearing the Giants jersey. They'd be like, no, it wasn't. I didn't know. Oh.
That's amazing. That sounds like something that you would do to someone else, so yeah. Maybe.
Yeah, I know. I get it from my brother. And then we, in turn, got that from our dad. We're a whole family of shit stirrers, Nick.
Oh, man.
But we're going to talk about manga, not...
Yes, yeah. We're going to talk about manga full of people who, if you said, oh, I'm such an asshole, you know, I embarrassed my brother by making it seem like, you know, he said things that I really said, they'd be like, whatever, and then they shoot you in the head. It's called Green Blood, which was suggested to us with the interesting note that it's a pseudo-Western
manga. It is. It's pseudo-Western.
It's set in, like, a post-Civil War America. It starts off in New York, but it gradually kind of goes west as the... Well, I guess for you guys, it's this way, whatever. But it gradually goes west as the series progresses. And it centers on these two brothers, Brad and Luke Burns. And Brad is basically a hitman for a local gang at first. But the main story revolves around the fact that Brad, and then later his brother, Luke, they want to get revenge on their scumbag asshole of a father who is this murdering, robbing, sadistic gang leader psychopath, basically. That's what the manga is centered on, is them trying to find their douchebag of a father and kill him. And the rest of it is essentially they go on this series of adventures that eventually lead them to that confrontation with their father, and they encounter various different types of foes that threaten them in some way or are harming someone that they want to help out in some way, and eventually they have a fight and then they move on to the next adventure. It's not a very long series, but it's basically like that. It's just, you know, a mini series of different adventures, sort of thing.
Well, it's about 5 volumes long, and I don't know for certain, but it definitely seems like it got rushed to an ending because it was getting canceled at the time, because there's a couple plot points that come up, or characters who are teased at to having an involvement in things, or still out there, that just never show up. Even to the point where when the finale is coming up, they cut to them again, and they still don't do anything. So I think this is a series that was probably canceled. Maybe it wasn't getting good rankings, or I'm not sure. I don't even know what magazine was in. But because of that, it actually becomes, in a way, almost more of a short story, which personally I think actually worked much better to the manga as a whole. I thought that this series has a very simple story. Annoyingly simple at times.
It's a really, really annoyingly simple.
It's a blunt series, and there's almost no room for nuance or anything like that. Almost any time there would be like a complicated character, it is literally explained to us in the manga what they are, like what their personality is. Like, a big thing is Brad. Brad's this hitman. Why is he a hitman? Well, we actually like have chapters where people explain to us why he is this way, going like verbatim to be like, what defines him as his core character. Like, it makes sense in context, because it's basically his little brother trying to be like, who is he? Like, is he this killer, or what's the core of him? But, like, for an example, there's a scene where, like, after he kills somebody, he has his hand, and he cuts his hand, and his hand's always bandaged. You'd be like, oh, I wonder why that is. And then, like, the next chapter, the prostitute he's with's like, you cut your hand because you want to feel pain, you want to punish yourself. And you're like, okay, you're just going to explain all this stuff. It's fine. But there isn't like a whole lot of nuance to that. But from that, I think it still kind of helps that this is a relatively simple story that has the benefit of having some good art to it. I imagine for some people it might help that once the time skip happens, both basically the young boy becomes absurdly handsome. I'm sure there are some people out there who are just like, oh my god, Luke is, oh, but boosh! That's the panties dropping, I assume. But it doesn't run for very long, and it has a pretty concise kind of, like, beginning, middle, and not even actually beginning and end. There's not really a middle, per se. There's, like, an act one, like a third of an act two, and then it's act three, and that act three is, like, 2 chapters. But I liked it for that reason. I feel like because it was so quick, I was able to kind of get around the fact that once it moved into, like, an episodic story for a little bit, it didn't get the chance to linger there for too long, because it's an okay story. I do not think it was necessarily qualified to talk about race relations between blacks and Americans or Native Americans. It really didn't have the scope to deal with those issues.
Keep in mind, this is, you know, something that was written by, you know, a Japanese guy about, you know, a period in American history. You know, imagine if, like, you and I got together and were like, we should write a manga about, you know, historical Japan. Let's write about, like, you know, I don't know, the battle where they invoke the spirit of kamikaze and so on and so forth.
That's not Dragon
We would
Ball
have
Z,
no idea. We would have, like, no idea where to start, because we're not experts in Japanese history. And it seems like the mangaka is not an expert in American history. It seems like he got his ideas for certain stories by, like, reading the Wikipedia article on certain events. Like, the stuff that he talks about, it references events accurately. You know, it's like, oh, you know, there was this dispute, you know, between, you know, members of the Sioux and, you know, the American military because, you know, of the American government wanted to transport this stuff and it was invading into Sioux, you know, territory and so on and so forth. But, and it's like, okay, that's true. But you're having all of the Native Americans who are trying to fight the army referring to themselves as the proud Sioux people when I don't think they would actually call themselves that. I think they would call themselves Lakotans. And so it's, you know, kind of like that. It's, you know, it's like, I don't think you are actually, you know, portraying the characters properly in this, despite the fact that you have the proper setting to do it in, kind of thing. And also, it's, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, you see these, you know, evil white people being, you know, mean to, you know, black people being mean to Americans using all sorts of racist language and stuff like that.
Nick, you've seen the first two seasons of The Wire. You're allowed to use the N-word now. That's part of...
No, that's not how it works.
It's part of what goes with it.
And it's like, you know, they say all these awful things and stuff, but it really seems like, you know, a guy who has not experienced or witnessed that type of behavior, you know, just kind of referencing stuff that he's read about or seen on TV, for example, as it seems very, very wide brushes kind of thing. And it's very weird at certain points like that, because it talks about these complicated issues, you know, of corruption, of racism, and so on and so forth. And it's like, you have no idea what you're actually really talking about at times. But if you look at the story in terms of purely, like, it's a set of different types of action sequences, then I think that it's more than serviceable. It's, you know, got some cool stuff. I mean, this is actually a really interesting battle series for me because of the Western setting, because you have these kinds of guys, you know, you've got a guy who's like a fast draw. You've got a guy who's a knife expert. You've got a guy whose specialty is lassoing people and dragging them around behind his horse and stuff like that. If this had been like a more, I guess, stereotypical, more shonen type of battle series, I think that would have gotten really into it, honestly, because it's a unique setting for that, because obviously there aren't a lot of, you know, manga to focus on in old Western kind of setting. But that said, a lot of the characters are also amazingly simple. Like, I don't think there's a single character you can really get into in this, in the whole thing. Archetypes everywhere and not explored very deeply or very interestingly. Like you mentioned, you know, Brad. Brad is, like, one of the least interesting protagonists I think we've encountered in the entire year we've been covering manga for this. And not to say he's bad, it's just he's not interesting. He's not unique. He's just kind of there.
I guess the only thing I would say to counter that is I do think he's unique in one aspect, in that he actually does fulfill his role. Normally with you have this character who is, I will risk everything to kill a man, but I have my morality pet essentially with me, the person who keeps me humanized. Usually what happens is at the end of the series, the person dies. You know, either the morality pet dies and that person has to, you know, go on their life in sadness, or the monster themselves dies and the morality pet gets to live on. This is one of the few times, technically spoilers, not that long of a series, I'm not too worried about it, where both of them survive at the end. And the implication is, like, not only that, Brad actually had a long, happy life. And you're like, oh.
It's implied that he lived to be something like 60 or 70 years old.
Which is pretty astonishing, considering this was back in the 1800s to early 1900s, so that was a very long lifespan at that point in time. So, yeah, it's just interesting to me that it didn't have to play. I've been watching a lot of Flash recently, Nick, and, like, the CW drama in me is just like, just fucking do it, just stop being stupid. And this was one time where I was like,
being stupid in this manga, honestly.
I was just happy that I was like, oh, for once, it doesn't end with, like, this person be like, no, I've gone too far to the dark side. You can't ever love me, Luke. It's just like, oh, no, my brother's still cool with this. You know what? I'm going to fucking do this shit for my brother. And then they do it. I thought that was nice.
That said, though, I felt the finale of the series was just a complete, like, wet fart of an ending. Like,
it comes very quickly and doesn't really have a whole lot of payoff to it. I'm actually trying to remember how exactly... He basically... They get bombarded with cannonballs. And then it seems like Brad's dead. And then the dad's going to kill Luke. And then I think Brad just comes
Brad
out
Brad just comes
him.
Up and just kills him. Like, he... Like, I think he cuts him across the throat with his bayonet.
Okay. It seems like there was probably more planned for this. Because it has one of those weird sort of things where it's like, oh, we've captured the villain. Like, we're bringing him into town to execute him. But clearly, like, from the moment you see it, you're like, all right, this dude has a plan. It doesn't seem like he really had much of a plan beyond, like, well, I'll just escape being executed. My dudes will rob the bank and we'll leave. Like, it seemed like there was going to be something more grandiose in store for it.
Well, his plan was... Edward King is the name of their father, who is the head of, like, the most renowned gang in the country. And he's got this, like, $15,000 bounty on his head, which was huge back in that day, you know. So he allows himself to be captured by bounty hunters who actually work for him. They take him into, like, it's either Kansas City or St. Louis, I forget.
It's Kansas City, because St. Louis is the first one. That's where the farm is, I believe.
Okay. So he allows himself to be taken into Kansas City, and they put him in jail, and they're, you know, he's got a plan. He's sitting in his cell, and he's all smirking and stuff. And the next day, they take him out to, you know, the platform for him to be hanged until dead. And so it turns out this is all distracting because everyone's, you know, gathered to see, you know, the infamous outlaw be hanged and killed and stuff. Meanwhile, he's got his boys robbing the bank because no one is, you know, paying attention to it. And it's like, okay, that makes sense. So they rob the bank, and then he's like, I'm holding the whole town hostage. And he's got his sniper positioned away. The sniper shoots the rope, you know, that stops him and stuff like that. And then somehow he kills all the police.
Yeah, like,
and the sheriff immediately.
It's a lot of, like, doom and destruction going around very quickly. And then, because there's not a lot of time to do things... It immediately is like the turnabout, like Luke shows up and he's like, I will stop you, Dad. And he's like, fuck you, shoots his son, and you're like, oh,
well, Luke
he's
kills him. Luke kills like all of his guys, like immediately. You know, like, you know, Once Upon a Time in Mexico style, just, you know, bah, 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 bah. All of them are dead except for King and his sniper.
Yes.
Because his sniper is far away. And also his group of basically pirates have commandeered this warship, which he's using to hold the entire town hostage, where it's like, you know, if you, you know, resist us, then they're going to start bombarding the town with cannonballs and stuff. Now, if he had opened with that by saying, like, you know, if the cops try and stop me, then, you know, I'm going to rain hellfire upon this town and stuff like that, that's fine. But he's gotten into this weird situation where he's killed all the cops, he's got, like, a congressman held at gunpoint, he's got a sniper, you know, on a building. He's got all of his men are the ones with guns. Like, his force is the only organized force in the entire town. And then he's like, also, I have a warship over there.
Seems like overkill.
What more do you need?
Well, the thing, and this is my biggest problem. I felt like the series would have been better as, like, a very short, simple revenge story. You know, King, for whatever, I don't know if they ever state exactly what his reason is for killing Alicia Burns, just he's an asshole. And Brad wants to kill him. If you go with that as a story, Luke wants to eventually, that works. It's when they got into the smaller stories where it's like, oh, you know, we need to find this farm and help them out there. And, oh, hey, there's this, you know, African-American rancher who is going to be accused of cattle rustling. We're going to help him out too. And all this Native American tribe is trying to make a big stand, you know, against the Gatling gun. All those things also then serve the purpose of making Edward King this larger antagonist, these, like, bigger and bigger and bigger, until he's essentially, like, just too big for this world anymore, like, to make sense. Because this is, like, 1800s, mid to late 1800s America. And this is a dude who's just has everything. He has a shit ton of money. He has a gang of, like, almost like battle shonen manga esque super specialized awesome people. He's got, you know,
his
hands.
His gang is really cool, by the way.
He's got hands just everywhere across the country. Like, he becomes so big, you're like, all right. Eventually, like, there needs to be some united force trying to take this guy out. It's like having just like a criminal leader Like, normally, they don't walk around like that. He's just so big, and it starts to take away from the story. Because you're like, this has stopped being a revenge story so much, and it's almost becoming like a superhero story. And
if it gets too big, it's just not going to work. There's a chapter dedicated just to building up Edward King, where he just walks into a town, the sheriff of the town and his two deputies have guns trained on him. And so Edward King does this cool thing where he just points his hand like this and goes, bang. And the sheriff gets shot in the head because his sniper is, you know, a nearby building. And then he waves his head, he goes, boom, and his bomber blows up the building behind him. And then, of course, while they're distracted by that, he shoots both of them in the head and stuff like that. So, like, this group of, like, four guys just, you know, completely destroys this town. And then just to drive it home, they, you know, kill a priest who comes to them saying, what are you doing? You just killed them, too, and so on and so forth. You know, it stops becoming a very... At this point, it had been, you know, a very dark series, and it wasn't incredibly realistic, but they're just so evil and perfect that it is ridiculous. And my problem with this was the fact that Edward King didn't seem to actually have a goal. He literally, like, his men agreed to literally just help out the army fighting, you know, the Sioux warriors just because. Mm-hmm. So that they'll get paid a bunch of money, and that they'll get to enjoy killing some Indians, basically. That's the only reason why they're doing it. He has no greater goal in mind. He's just a greedy asshole. That's it. What's he getting money for? To have it. What's he killing people for? Because he enjoys it. And there's no exploration of that or anything like that. It's just that he's an evil asshole. And yeah, like you said, if it had been a simple revenge story, okay, that's fine. But why is he a larger-than-life figure? What makes him, you know, somehow have that extraordinary capability and stuff like that? Nothing. He's just a guy.
Yeah, he's just evil. And that eventually the explanation starts to fall apart and detract from the series. I like the series overall. It has a cool a lot of points I think work in its favor. I think it has phenomenal art. I mean, it seriously has some really great visuals. It is a little bit of a gory series, but it's not gratuitously so. Like, you're not going to see a bunch of torsos with, like, guts hanging out of it or anything. That's not like Gantz or something like that. But there is some blood to it and things like that. So if you're one of those people that want to avoid it, that's, you know, going to be a knock against you right there. But I feel like the art in the series is very well done. The battles, when they have them, are kind of epic. And, you know, there's some climactic ones in there. And I thought, when the story's simple, it detracts from it a bit. But I kind of just appreciated the fact that it was smaller. And it exists in a setting that I like. I like that, like, very early America kind of setting. Especially when they're in New York. It's all about, like, the different gangs. Like, two Irish gangs fighting each other. Like, it just appeals to, like, the kind of nerd in me that likes that sort of stuff. So, to that regard, I like that series overall, but I feel like the more it went on and kept, like, extending itself further and further, like it meant to be a long-running series, that's where it just kept falling apart for me. And it picks up a little bit at the end, even though the conclusion's kind of like a mess. It's still, the fact that it just tied it up before it got too long and too overblown, I think saved it a little bit in my book. It's the only time I think probably a cancellation helped the series out.
I think that the art is actually kind of up and down. I think that it really excels when it comes into, like, just badass pose type of moments, where, you know, there's a whole lot of space dedicated to one image. My favorite scene in the series is where the young black kid who is a cattle rustler, basically.
Yeah, I think it's Ned.
Yeah, he basically helps Brad fight this... the lasso villain who is chasing them on horseback. And so basically he gets the guy to, you know, chase really quickly after them while they're both on horseback, and then he's such a good rider, he manages to just pull basically, like, he does the equivalent of, like, you know, a guy is turning a motorcycle and having to, like, tilt it over in order to get it to turn around. He does that with a horse so that they turn before they reach, you know, the edge of a canyon. And that one, you know, brief moment of him, you know, coming to a stop in front of the canyon is a great visual. When it comes to more complicated fight scenes, when you're supposed to be following them, doing these individual moves, countering each other's stabs, and, you know, it was like, oh, he punched him, you know, in this area, and he cut him in this part of his arm, so this part of his arm is damaged and stuff, I found it much more difficult to follow because it's very dark and everything was, you know, flowing into each other. And it's like, well, if I'm supposed to know exactly where he got stabbed, why is it so hard to see? And so on and so forth. So when I got into that, it's, I thought that it really worked against itself. But there are moments that do look really cool. Although, sometimes pointlessly so. For example, that final confrontation that Luke and Brad have against Edward, they do this awesome, you know, we're back to back, you know, kind of thing. They're only facing one guy. Why are they back to back? It's stupid.
It is rule of cool it a couple times. Like, there's a fight very early on where he's fighting a mafia member from, not mafia, but a gang member from the rival gang. And, like, they're having, like, this big knife gunfight. And then just eventually the room catches fire so they can have, like, this flaming death fight. Which is cool, but it doesn't add anything. And I think that's what I maybe meant when I said the battle scenes. It's just, it's very cool and dynamic, but I agree, it's hard to follow. Very much like mid-2000s, early 2010s action movies where you just see, like, a lot of, like, punch and hard cut. And you just kind of see a lot of things happening. You basically see a lot of, like, kind of slashes or, like, gunfire effects, and you can't really tell exactly what the following action or the motion of it all is. But I guess it's just kind of that notion that it's like, this is cool. Hey, look, you saw the after effect of this dude's throat got cut off. You could kind of, you know, figure out what happened from there, I guess.
The series also operates on Hollywood rules of violence and injury, because during that same knife fight, Brad basically gets a kukri and just chops a guy's arm off. Just does it. Guns make people's bodies splatter blood everywhere. You know, so you can gratuitously injure someone if they're not important, but then, because Brad's the main character, he can also suffer from all sorts of bullet wounds and not have to have, you know, his limb amputated or something like that. It's just like, just put bandages on, he'll be fine. Literally, there's a moment towards the end of the series where they're in Montana and he gets shot basically in the heart, like somewhere in the chest. He gets shot. So Luke takes him back to this barn where they've got this this lady friend of theirs, and they heal him up there. He rests up for like a month after being in a coma. I looked up the distance from St. Louis to that Fort Montana they were fighting at. It's 1,200 miles!
He's doing like a fucking Oregon Trail. He just skipped 7 locations.
Grueling. Assume a grueling pace, or else you'll get dysentery.
It's like Oregon Trail, but he found that warp pipe in the Mario game where he just passed over half the Midwest.
So yeah, Brad just like travels 1,200 miles with a bullet wound in his chest, and he's fine.
they got that, and just warp, 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 and they came up over there.
So yeah, it is a very much just like, if you like, you know, just straight up action series, you know, turn your brain off, watch these guys kill each other, and then it's the end of the fight, so of course he's not going to die, because he's not going to die from an old wound, you know, that's not cool. They have to go and have their fight so he can, you know, stab someone with his pistol bayonet. I do really like Brad's gun, by the way.
It seems like a smaller yet not stupid version of I wanted to call him Liam Squallhart's name, because I think they call him in Kingdom Hearts, but Squall Lionheart?
Lionheart, yeah.
Something like that.
Well, because, you know, it is basically just a pistol with a bayonet on it, although yeah, it does work.
But for some reason, making it smaller, far
more effectively than it should be,
makes it seem so much less goofy.
So yeah, I mean, it's a series that it's like, it's not long to read through. It's got some fun moments in it. It has some cool moments in it. It is a stupid series, though. It's an underdeveloped story. The characters are fairly cookie cutter. It's a lot of it doesn't make sense. In terms of like just straight up, you know, read it, have a bunch of fun. Can't really go wrong with it, because it'll take you only really a couple of days to get through it. So
yeah, I enjoyed it. I think it's something that if you enjoy kind of like It's not entirely a Western series. It's a little too much like Hollywood awesome to play as like a pure Western. But I think if you kind of like action, you like Westerns, if you think you'd enjoy kind of like a blend of the two of them, I definitely think you'd enjoy it. As long as you're not turned off by violence or anything like that. It's a series that's going to be quick and easy for you to read. There's a lot of cool moments, especially if you're a big fan of kind of like HBO series too, because I did get a little bit of Boardwalk Empire / like Oz feelings from it a little bit here and there, especially when there's like pages devoted to like explaining how things were back in that time that have nothing to do at all with it. Kind of definitely kind of reminded me of those scenes in Oz. But I just enjoy it. I think there's some good scenes to it, and it's very quick and easy to get through. It's not going to be something that's going to be holding you up for days or anything like that. So to that regard, I'd recommend it. But if it doesn't sound interesting to you or anything like that, it's not a story you're going to be discussing with friends for years to come or anything like that. It's essentially what it is. And that doesn't mean it's bad, but just go in knowing that, and I think you'll enjoy it more.
Yeah.
So there we go. That's it. That's Green Blood.
All right. Yeah. Let's move on to the recap portion of the Weekly Manga Recap. Let's start off with some Black Clover. Page 43, Explosion of Malice. So, yeah. Last time, the creepy glasses...
Feels like it needs to be a band name if it's not already, right?
We are Explosion of Malice! All of our metal roots are the same. So, yeah, the creepy scientist girl with glasses and the gel powers showed up last time. Turns out she is the, I guess, supplier for our kidnappers. And so, yeah, she shows up after Asta and company have been kicking ass. But, yeah, obviously, she seems like much more of a threat. And so she summons up one of her gel salamander things and starts rushing in towards them. Gauss tries to summon this kind of web of lasers with his mirror powers. But her Salaman thing, just absorbs it all and refracts it all, and she's fine. So then she launches an attack towards Asta, and the attack bends around his cleaver so that it will actually reach him, and she pins it down and proceeds to do creepy stuff.
It is creepy. Now, here's the thing, guys. I know a lot of people were saying, like, oh, she's like a Mayuri. She's not like a Mayuri. She's of a different kind of creepy. This is the kind that makes you have to introduce yourself to your neighbors when you move into a new neighborhood.
Yeah, really. Because, like, she pins him down and starts licking him.
And at first, like, she pins him down and it's, like, a little suggestive, but it's, like, it's mostly just because of the outfit and the fact that they're, like, opposite genders. Like, it might not be so bad otherwise. Then she starts licking him and you're like, alright, that's kind of weird. Then she starts biting him, and you're like, alright, this is fucked up.
And not like a, you know, love bite or anything like that. She comments on how his blood is normal after she bites him in the neck. And then she's like, and I'm gonna, you know, rip out your fingernail now. Okay!
This is like psychotic ex-girlfriend kind of crazy. Like, I'm just going to start taking things from you so I can make a mannequin of you in my room or something like that.
So Theresa summons her flame magic and summons this giant flaming cross to blast her away in order to protect Asta, and she reintroduces herself as a former magic knight, Theresa, the Crimson She-Leopard. And
why is, like, I don't know if this is something I've just not noticed for a while, but why do, when, like, females have to, like, call themselves after an animal, they have to add she in front of the name? It's like, because I was reading, like, hearing recently about a passage in the Bible that's like, a bunch of kids called some dude Balt and they were attacked by she-bears. And you're like, why do you have to just, like, differentiate that from regular bears?
Really?
It's a great Bible story, though.
So, Asta eventually seizes on the fact, it's like, wait, do you know Fuego Leon? And she says, yes, old Fuegi.
Actually, because we jumped ahead of Simone here. I just want to go back to something. So, creepy girl is on top of her, at the top of Asta, and the fire magic nun throws fire at her. The only damage she sustains is the top she's wearing rips open more to show more of her cleavage.
Oh, yeah, it does.
I was like, what a weirdly specific clothing damage shot to have, too. It was like, you were like, ah,
that's
shit.
Not how fire works.
It's not how fire works. It's also like, what was the logic of this? Like, no, this outfit isn't sexy enough yet. It's like, she's barely wearing clothes. It's like, at this point, she's wearing band-aids and a dish towel. Like, yeah. Come on, you didn't need some of this.
So, yeah, Teresa says that she actually used to be Fuego Leon's teacher. So, okay. That right, makes sense. Taught the flame magic guy how to use flame magic. She uses flame magic. The scientist girl observes the fact that she is now outnumbered 3-1 between Gauss, Asta, and Theresa. So, creepy pedo stash dude says, hey, if you heal me, I can use my mud magic to help you. Also, give me money.
I've heard this before of, like, help, I'm wounded, heal me. Like, oh, you don't want me to do that. Like, just do it. But I've never, like, heal me, then pay me. Like, what is she, like, meant to do? Like, heal you, and then she's like, all right, let's get out your checkbook. Do you have a card? Because I have the Square app. I can just, you know, right, we're going to have to do a check then. I'm going to see if it clears now.
I love his logic because he has that little interim moment where he's like, yes, heal me and give me money and then I'll leave.
It's just like a Wario, like, give me that money, do it and I'll help you. And once I have the money, I'm just going to take it.
Like, I mean, because, yeah, you know, I imagine it's like, oh yeah, use your healing magic to help me and stuff. And then I'm actually going to make a break for it as soon as I'm good enough to run. But no, he's just like, as soon as I'm good enough to run, and I have the money. It'll be that easy.
It's like a new level of greediness from this kind of character.
So, yeah, she's like, are you sure you want help? Yes, do it! Okay. Pulls out this fucking massive syringe, like, this thick around, and this big, and pumps him full of it into his neck, and of course he starts freaking out. And mud starts, like, leaking out of his eyes and mouth, and he turns into this giant mud golem thing, this huge, hideous monster. And Scientist Girl is like, I messed up a little. Oh, well, his magic recharged. Doo-doo-doo.
She's very nonchalant about these things. Like, eh, whatever. Yeah. It's a monster.
Teresa says, all right, Gaush, Asta, protect the children. And so Gaush is like, yep.
I will protect the child.
He just gradually and immediately runs.
Okay, he's like, sure, I will protect the children. She's like, then you just grabbed one. He's like, yes, the children, singular. She's like, that's plural! I've been in jail. I don't know words. I don't know your laws of grammar. I thought I got one over on you. I'm taking one. Fuck you.
I do really like that. Just like, yep, protecting the one that matters.
Bye.
The mud golem starts to attack. And Scientist Girl says, yes, and I'm going to take you home this time for sure, Asta. So, that's where the chapter ends. I like this chapter pretty well. You know, get a little bit more of insight into this girl's abilities. I like the building up of her as this really creepy type of character. Not sure about the sexy nature of it. Because, like, do people think that that's hot? I guess so.
Someone must. A weird point where I wonder if Black Clover's like, look, I got a lot of fangirls. I need the boys to find this series popular, so I'm just gonna, you know, I'm gonna throw a little service in there, a little TNA, a little action in there, a little eroticism, just a little bit, just see how it plays. Because I can't fathom any other reason to be like, oh, I was attacked by fire, but luckily only the top of my shirt came open and exposed cleavage. That's all that happened.
Maybe that's the same logic behind why so many girls are obsessed with Asta now. Maybe he's trying to aim for that harem angle because harem series are popular with guys almost exclusively.
Well, Nick, I mean, there's only Noelle and the other girl.
Mimosa and Rebecca.
Rebecca's not going to be an important character, Nick. She's not going to be important.
I'm not sure if you remembered to do that last week.
Yeah. No. Well, she wasn't in last week, so... She was just mentioned this week through us, so yeah.
Let's talk about Bleach. Oh, awesome. Okay. Bleach, chapter 656. I forget what this chapter is titled. Hang on. God of Thunder, of course.
I like that we've essentially reached the point now where this character was, like we jokingly said, like he's Thor. But you're like, well, he's not acting. Like, he just looks like kind of like that Thor figure. And then this chapter's title comes out, and you're like, he hasn't even done anything with, like, electricity.
And then it turns out it doesn't apply to him at all.
But it's kind of like,
how do you design a character like Thor and then have a super...
Like, I did an event on the One Piece forum we did earlier this year, and I made, like, four pirate captains. And one of them, it came out when, like, Age of Ultron was coming out, so I purposely made one exactly like Thor, kind of like to tie in with that. So his name was like Roth, like just an anagram of Thor, and he had like a hammer, and he talked like old fucking Viking style. And I was like, even that character, who is intended to be Thor, feels like he's less of a Thor XP than this dude. But he's, for some reason, the stuff that should make this character Thor just don't seem to exist. Like, he doesn't talk, like, he has the look of a Viking, doesn't talk like him very much. Fucking is called, like, the title's called the God of Thunder, hasn't shown any thunder-related abilities yet. It's close, though. I feel like we're gonna get it, maybe. I'm not sure.
So, of course, last time, yeah, Gerard Valkyrie went real all huge and big and just kind of stepped on the people fighting him. And now he's just kind of...
La 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 la.
Being huge. Today is a good day to get some honey.
That's right, he's Winnie the Pooh.
So, Askenach LeVar kind of looks in the horizon and is like, oh, he's used his shrift. All right, then. Oh, okay. And he just starts talking.
This is maybe my favorite. This might be Chad being like, you don't feel that way. Like, yeah, of course you're right. This might be my favorite moment because he fucking monologues to somebody.
He goes on for 4 pages.
Like, explain intricate details.
I got to, like, the 3rd page of this, and I was like, I swear to God, this is the stupidest thing, unless he has someone next to him who is either dead or unconscious, who he can't reply to, that he's talking to, instead of just talking to himself. And it turns out that's the case, which made me go, okay, good job, Kubo.
It is a fantastic example of Kubo dialogue. Because it is a motherfucking... it's a Wikipedia page. He's essentially reading to nobody.
Like, even so, he's explaining things to, like, no one cares about this. You would never need to explain this level of detail to someone who you are planning on killing.
Like, it's like he's talking Bond, to...
I mean, this is worse than actual, like, you know, exposition to nobody. This is Bond villain monologue. It's ridiculous. It's like, why are you telling him this? You're taking so much time. Just up the lethal dosage and kill him.
It's not like he's talking to Uryu. It's not like he needs to inform anybody about these details. He's talking to an opponent he's intending on killing. Someone he already assumes he's going to kill. And not only that, someone who he knows is unconscious right now and believes is unconscious. So he's not, like, explaining to him, like, well, maybe his unconscious thought will remember it, and afterwards he'll know these rules. Like, these. He's like, oh, this dude's unconscious now, and he's gonna die. But I'll just explain to him anyway. Like, I want to just assume Askenach LeVar is just insane.
So, Askenach LeVar begins by saying that Lilibaro is the leader of Schutzstaffel. He was the first Quincy that his majesty granted a shrift to, so his position was unquestioned. The other two remaining Schutzstaffel, Pernita and Gerard, had powers before his majesty gave them any. They are Quincy's that his majesty did not grant powers to. That's why rumors about who they really were ran rampant. Pernita was supposedly Rayo's left arm, and Gerard, Rayo's heart. Okay. Pernita was actually
literally a left hand.
Is Gerard going to suddenly turn into just like this pulsating mass whenever he releases his second form or something like that?
Oh, I hope his second form is like a figurative heart too, like it's shaped like a Valentine and it just has wings. he just flies around shooting thunder at people like tra-la-la-la-la.
Like, I mean, you could say, like, oh, it's just being figurative. But Pernito was not figurative.
He was like, I'm literally his anthropomorphic hand with nerve powers. It's essentially if you took my hand and just put googly eyes on the middle of it.
No, neither was the other of Ryo's arms figurative, because that thing that came out of Ukitake's mouth, that was also a hand. So, I don't know, is it gonna turn out that Gremmy was, like, Rayo's brain, and that explains how fucked up the Soul Society is because that unimaginative fuck was actually the brain behind everything the whole time? You know, imagine that, it's like, he has limited creative thoughts, so he just makes all these stupid things. This is literally God who created this world, and, you know, lacking that level of imagination, that's why the world is so messed up.
That's why ghosts need to eat and sleep and bleed. He's just like, why did we do this? We're ghosts. He's like, I didn't think of that. It seems impossible. People, you're a person, you need to eat. You eat. That's what happens.
So, yeah, Askin Octavar is like, I don't know, about the rumors and stuff, but I can see why they'd be tied to something mysterious after witnessing their incredible powers. Don't you think so, Ichigo? Oh, that's right, you can't hear me anymore.
As it cuts to a shot of him standing over Ichigo's fallen body, and it's just like, you've been talking for so long to someone's unconscious body. Why?
Ichigo, you lost to this fucker.
It's so... This is the last chapter of the year. Like, at this point, Nick, this is the end. Like, when we do our 2015 recap, this is the chapter we end on. So, like, I try to think, like, what were the big, like, moments for Ichigo over this past year? And it's like, I think he attacked Yuhabak at the start of this year, and this year ends with him being knocked unconscious off screen by fucking Askin Octavar.
Oh, God.
Oh, that's great.
People have actually seized on this monologue of Askin's, though, and said, like, okay, well, this is why Lilibaro is special, is because he is the first Stern Ritter. This is why Pernita is special, is because he's the arm of God. This is why, Gerard is special, because he's the heart of God. So what's special about Askin Octavar? Because he just seems like this prancy, cowardly douchebag.
Prancy is the best way to describe him. I was trying to think of a non-offensive way to describe him. Like, hey, he's kind of foppish. Prancy is the perfect way. If I see this character walking, I assume he's prancing.
When he was, like, running scared away from Grimmjow, he was actually going...
He's whistling.
So Chad and Orihime arrive. Turns out they still exist.
I so want this. Beyond anything else, if I can, like, if Santa grants wishes, Nick, because I still believe, if he grants wishes, the only thing I want for Christmas is for this to be Chad's big damn hero moment of this entire arc and the rest of the series. This is his one moment to be like, Bronzo Derecha de Gigante, boom! And nothing fucking happens.
It's like, I want you guys to, like, play in your head. Because, from the moment that Chad and Orihime arrive on the panel of this page, I want you to imagine triumphant sounding Mexican themed music. Charges forward and he's just, oh, Plaza de Leche de Gigante! He runs in, he smashes the ground in front of Askin Octavar, and then it turns out Orihime and Chad are inside this zone.
He's like, oh god, I'm so sick. Oh my god, you're so lame, Chad. What happened?
Like the mariachi band that was behind him, suddenly just goes, pow!
They're like, burr, 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 burr.
And so you stepped into the zone where I made this not quite fatal area of poison and lowered your tolerance to whatever. And I'm just like, I just decided to make you weak to Reishi because the entire world here is made of Reishi. So, fuck you guys!
And he's like, I won't kill you yet, but it will eventually. I have to eat what I inject you with to kill you, and I'm so full right now, so, like, you just sit there and slowly die for a little bit until I get my appetite back.
Yeah, I do like that little detail where he's, like, at least explains this is why you're not dead quite yet, is because I can't make it lethal until I have enough room in order to take in Reishi. But, I'll just sit here, because you guys can't touch me, and I'll be fine. It's not a bad plan for working with implementations of his powers, but why he isn't actually releasing and just shooting them in the head, as he tries to do immediately, I guess is because he's just an asshole.
Well, he notes that he's not... He definitely isn't somebody who enjoys brutality, because he notes this... We've known this kind of before, and it's kind of reiterated here when Yorichi shows up, and he talks about how Bambietta, said the same thing. Why don't you just strangle him to death afterwards? You have to assume he doesn't just shoot him with his bow either, because that's still just too messy for him. Like, if he has to kill somebody, he likes it to be this, like, quiet, biological kind of death of just them getting a lethal dose of something. Something he doesn't have to get his hands dirty. And it kind of fits in with his prancy nature, He doesn't like to get his hands dirty in any way, shape, or form.
So Yoruichi shows up, like, directly behind him, doing, like, the whole Spider-Man upside-down pose. And instead of punching him in the head and knocking him out to help her friends, she taunts him and gives away her position. Like an assassin does.
Like, the assassin group in this series are ridiculous.
I'm the second in command of the assassin group, which is why my Shikai is a giant ball and chain.
Assassinate! Boom, boom! This is what he shouts.
I want an entire series of nothing but Maeda.
Go. It's like One Punch Man.
Assassinating the targets by going, assassinate! Blah!
It's like a businessman at the bus stop. He's got like a newspaper. He's like, and you just see Onodera fucking Omeyeda show up from the side and he's just like, assassinate!
I want Onodera to be his partner too.
Like, he's like, assassinate! Crushes the guy with a mace. Like, his body just explodes everywhere.
Oh no, Mr. Omeyeda, you killed that person. Oh well, have some sweets. You're terrible at making sweets, Onodera.
Like, it's just like, it's like,
when are you gonna confess to that Raku guy?
He screams assassinate, crushes a man in the most un-assassin-y way possible, and her sole line every single time is just, oh my! Like, that's like her response. And then it's just the next adventure, which is just the same thing, just in more ridiculous situations, to the point that, like, we need you to assassinate this Russian terrorist. He's escaped onto the space station. And you see the dude flying in space, and he's like, good, my plan has come to fruition. Assassinate! And it's just on a dare in a space suit.
Batman emerges wearing this astronaut suit that doesn't quite fit him.
Assassinate!
Oh, God. So they start to fight, Asuka Naklavar and Yoruichi. And Asuka Naklavar is like, oh, I don't want to have to fight you this way. And he just does this back kick towards her. So much for not getting his hands dirty, I guess. And they exchange bleach banter, you know? And he says, you know, I don't want...
We I feel like we need to give him a voice. And he has a line here that I feel like has defined his voice. Because he says at a point, could you be any more insensitive? Like, he's just like, no, it means being an enemy at one's own style. Sticking to controlling fatal dose is my style. Choking is a style fit for women like you and Bambi.
Maybe do him like Tyler Breeze or something. Oh, God.
Sticking to controlling fatal dose is my style.
What is that?
Isn't that how Tyler Breeze talked? He always has his, like, fucking lips pursed and shit. Like, just like, I'm just so pretty. I think I'm doing channeling, like, more Tim Curry as fucking Dr. Frankenfurter. I'm just a sweet transsexual.
I can't get my voice.
NXT Arena in Florida.
So, Yoruichi starts unleashing her, you know, Shunko thing, summoning these wings of lightning, sort of, from her back.
Yeah, that's why they don't wear backs on their suits, Nick. Because right, the jets from there.
Because otherwise it would tear their clothes up. Yes.
Which is pretty silly.
So, yeah, Asin says, oh, yeah, you and Babby are both beautiful, but a woman's worth is not her face. It's whether she's stylish or not! God, he's so prancy. He does have a cool Quincy bow, I think, because it's this thing that's, like, bound up around his wrist, and then it kind of unfolds like a... I don't know, kind of like one of those bands of plastic kind of things. They're act like a spring. And also, it shoots two arrows at once, which is always cool. But Yoruichi just kind of charges in, grabs one of the arrows, and throws it back at him. Because apparently you can do that with Reishi, I guess. And hits him in the shoulder, and she says, alright, look, we're in a rush, so I'm just gonna, you know, beat you down, and we'll kind of go on our way. And she unleashes Shunko Raijin Senkei, God of Thunder Battle Form, which is where the God of Thunder actually comes from at this
time. Aww. I wanted Gerard to, like, next chapter, be like, Mjolnir, to me!
And she just summoned this giant column of electricity to blast Asuka Naklavar, and that's where the chapter ends, presumably.
Is he dead, Nick? Is Asuka Naklavar dead?
That blast of lightning actually killed Unohana, And she's never coming back.
She came back, but died in the blast.
She's like, I'm fine, actually.
She's like, everybody, I'm here. This was a silly chapter, and I feel like it was a great chapter to end this year of Bleach on. Because next year...
It would be completely forgettable without that stupid monologue right at the beginning.
Yeah. When next year, when we talk about this, because I feel like, it must have been 2 years ago, but I know there was 1 year where I was like, yeah, last year started with the, superstar fight. We were still in the middle of that, and it was just like, and here's where we are now. It was like, oh my god, nothing's happened! This is going to be a great...
Honestly, I was willing to guess that Mass Demasculine happened at the beginning of this year.
Yeah, I had to stop. I was like, I think he was the year before that, right? We've got to be past that. But yeah, this year, essentially, not a whole lot happened, and I want next year to just be the same thing. Like, yeah, Nick, remember last year we started with this Askanok LeVar reveal?
Oh, God. This is so stupid. Want to hit Fairy Tale?
I'll hit Fairy Tale. They're right there. Now, Fairy Tale, chapter 466, Assassin. Speaking of assassins, Nick. Speaking of assassinate. So last time, Natsu's big plan didn't work out. He could have, but instead of letting him finish the job, Happy didn't want him to basically kill himself in the process, leaving Xerath still alive. So Xerath speaks to his evil glasses dude, and he's basically like, yeah, we keep marching. We're taking down Fairy Tale. Get me new clothes. Something befitting of an emperor. I don't know exactly what that means. I guess a crown. He's wearing kind of cool clothes already. I don't know what he's going to show
up. He's just going to show up naked the next time. He's like, what? The emperor's new clothes. Come on.
Yeah, he's naked in that. I'm like, ew. This is gross. We get a little small scene of Natsu kind of at like this tranquil forest pond with Happy. And Happy basically kind of just says, like, you and me are always going to be friends. And they hug. It's like Ash talking to Pikachu for a moment. Where you're just like, I feel like that song's to the point, like, you don't have to say.
The time has come.
Do, 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 do. We then cut away to, I forget her name. Every time I forget her name. Female member of the Spriggan 12 who's
Brandish.
Not Brandish. But it's not Brandish. This
Brandish,
one,
like Sigma or something.
No, Brandish is the shrinky girl. I
forget. Oh, the other one female is, member. I don't know. I don't remember her name either. I admit.
I'm blanking on her name. But anyway, she's in town talking about how it's like, oh, you know, can't believe, this town's pretty sweet. I want to, Brandish is here, and oh, just thinking about her humiliation makes my mouth water, which is kind of creepy. But I guess it works because they're just like they're chicks who hate each other, so. Women, Nick. Always talking about how they hate
each other. I always say that all women hate each other, JR.
I just become king. I'm just like, Nick, what happens? Do you think, what I wouldn't give to be that shirt? Barely holding together those big breasts. Woo! I'm 90s king where it's, like, you couldn't even hide behind, like, oh, it's a PG thing. I can't just be like, oh, I'm gonna bang her pussy. Like, oh, king. But she does note, she's like, the other member of their group who's hanging out with them, because we know that Wall's with her, the real Wall, but there's, the Spriggan 12 are moving in threes, and you're like, oh, where's Neinhardt? And you just see this shadowed figure in the, like, all in black, kind of looking like he's in some armor of some kind on the ship, and she's like, oh, jeez, this guy just refuses to cooperate, and I'm really starting to miss you now, Brandy. Essentially, the rest of this chapter kind of teases to the other members of the Spriggan 12 we haven't met yet. We cut away to, like, where Mermaid Heel and who's, I guess, Lamia Scale, I think is the other guild that they're with. Essentially, they're having, the guild Leon's in, they're about to have a fight against some of the members of the Spriggan 12 over there, and they cut away to the forest, and we see Yokino, I think it is her name? Yeah, Yukino, basically the spirit stellar mage of Sabretooth, she only has one key, who the fuck cares, sees the god of death of the Spriggan 12, Bradman, not two separate words, Bradman, but it just, the way you read it, I can't separate it from being Bradman. Which sounds like the most unopposing name for someone whose title is the God of Death. Like, it shouldn't be on there, because, like...
He looks insanely awesome, too, by the way. Mm-hmm.
He's got, you know, like,
armor, and he's got this hood that covers up most of his face. He's, you know, portrayed in... He's cast in shadow and stuff.
He's got kind of, like, almost, like, pauldrons, like, big fucking, like, metal shoulder gauntlets or shoulder guards and just, like, a cool-looking uniform. But his name's Bradman.
And it seems like people are just, like... dropping just from being around him, because we see people running away in terror, and like there's this one guy who's you know, veins around his eyes are bulging out, and suddenly starts coughing up blood before he can get away.
It's very interesting.
Yeah, I mean it's cool, but yeah, Bradman.
I would definitely have picked a different name than Bradman. Maybe we find out like, no, my name is Lucifer Bradman, but they just call me Bradman. Like, I would have definitely strongly urged Lucifer to be my name. And then we cut away to Eastern Fiore, where the three wizard saints, I think it was three, maybe it's four, I guess it's three, I don't know. They run up against basically the super strong members of the Spriggan 12 over there, and they introduce us to the character who is essentially the reason for the title of this, Jacob Lessio, who is a genius in the art of magical assassination. And he basically just shits on Jura and is like, nice hair. And he smiles, like, He has a very weird look. He has a very, like, oval-shaped head with, like, a crappily drawn scar tattoo. Like, a skull tattoo on his head. It's an interesting look. And it's also strange that this is the title of the chapter. I guess it also applies more to kind of what happens next, but it feels like it's applying to this more. I don't know if I consider what happens next an assassination. Anyway, though, we cut to the actual guild. Brandish is in her cell, and Marin, that's his name. Marin shows up, the guy who was always with Brandish, who graded women about whether or not they pass, essentially. Brandish is like, oh, great, you're here. You know, take these off. This guild's going to just get torn apart. You know, what a great pet you are. And Marin starts choking her, and he kind of just goes crazy. He's like, ah, you've been treating me like a slave, and that's why I've decided you fail. You get a failing grade. And there's a very detailed panel of him strangling Brandish to death. Like, I assume she's going to survive.
Her eyes are tearing up, drool's coming out of her mouth, it looks like, and she's, you know, basically trying to gasp for breath and stuff. So, amazingly, despite Black Clover's best efforts, Fairy Tail still has the creepiest scene this week in manga.
It is a very, if it weren't so detailed, it wouldn't bother me. It's also kind of strange, because, like, look, like I kind of grasped over time that maybe Hiro has some kind of BDSM fetish, because there's a lot of that popping up now and then. And this scene kind of has a little bit of it, too. But then she starts strangling, or getting strangled, and I'm like, I hope this wasn't meant to be sexy.
Because, yeah.
It's terrifying. Like, I'm like, holy shit.
Some people do have an asphyxiation fetish, so I don't know. I mean, maybe it was, but it is.
He's like, I gotta get every dollar I can. I'm hitting every fetish. Next week is grandma diapers. I'm like, that seems like a small window. It's like, there's an entire website for hot women whose cars are stuck in mud. There's a market for this.
That's such a weird thing.
but yeah, that's essentially the chapter. That's where it ends on. Next chapter is called Mother's Key. Seems like an important chapter, but it's a weird chapter. I kind of like some of the teases we get to some of these guys. I mean, I joked about Bradman's name, but he seems like he's a cool character. I kind of like the dude on the ship who's just kind of cloaked in shadows. He's like, fuck you, I'm not getting out of here. You know, I'm just going to be uncooperative. Like, seems like they're interesting characters. I don't know so much about the guy of magical assassination. It seems like he has an interesting power, but the design's kind of off. But Fairy Tail has those from time to time. And the end here, where Marin starts trying to kill her, is kind of interesting at the very least. Grim, in a way. But something about the chapter just didn't click with me. I guess it just feels like there's a lot going on, yet at the same time, nothing's really going on. I guess I'm kind of more interested in seeing the fallout of Natsu's actions than necessarily Dane introduced all the Spriggan 12 side members we haven't met yet. But
right.
That's not a knock against the chapter. It's still a good chapter.
I mean, I do like the beginning of the chapter where it shows, you know, the fallout of that, you know, of Happy carrying Natsu away. Because, you know, Natsu's upset at first, but, you know, it's like, well, you know, Happy was right. You know?
Yeah.
And also I like the bit where Xerath is like, well, that was the last thing that could kill me. And so it's time for me to, you know, basically just stop holding back and hoping for someone to kill me. I'm just gonna
reach out, turn on a record player, it starts playing Cool in the Gang. Celebrate good. He's just like slowly walking forward, just joyless and emotionless.
I also like that brief little moment where he's standing there, he's all beat up and shitty, and the very next panel, all the damage is suddenly healed.
Yeah.
Because, like, yeah, wow, yeah, you know, if that really was Natsu's best shot, you know, he probably could have done it, but, you know, that now that he stops, like, he's immediately better because he is super immortal and evil and stuff. So.
It was very
But, yeah. It was an alright chapter, the creepiness of the asphyxiation scene aside. I do like that, you know, we're getting to know more of the members of the Spriggan better, because if this is actually going to be a big deal, as opposed to all the Spriggan 12 are dead after, you know, their first fights and stuff, and it seems as if we're actually past that point, it seems like they've managed to take one out, and it seems like Brandish, despite being captured, is going to continue to play a role in the story. Then I'm glad that we're getting introduced to these guys and now so that they can get built up.
So it's an important chapter to have.
Okay, let's move on to Food Wars, Shokugeki no Soma Triumphant Return, chapter 148. So we start off at the Polaris Dorm, where it's some of Azon's goons have finally managed to break through one of the windows of the dorm, and so everyone in the dorm goes to react, but suddenly they realize that they've stopped. They aren't actually trying to get inside the dorm because they've been contacted and have been basically, you know, told to, you know, pull back because Azon lost. And everyone who was at the dorm, you know, finally manages to look on the screen where the Shokugeki is being broadcast, and they see that Soma has won. And Soma is still standing triumphantly over Azon, who is sitting on the floor like a goon. And, so yeah.
Oh, you hosed me!
Ooh, how dare you! And, so everyone's reaction is like, oh my god, Soma won, and so on and so forth. And Azon is reacting, you know, just, you know, contemplating his defeat, and he's like, no! This can't be happening! The revolution was complete! I even made an example out of some fool! It was supposed to have worked, but then Yukihira came along and threw a wrench into the works! I love doing that voice. I want Azon to stick around forever. So I love this moment that someone has here. He's just like, hey, I just beat the council's 9th seat. Does that mean I'm on the council of 10 now? The judge is like, no, you idiot! No, the seat wasn't on the line, so no, you don't think of it as the Council of Ten as being so trivial and so on and so forth. But then Soma takes a moment to kind of dress them down and say, I hope you've learned how dumb it is to rig matches. You can never tell how much better any dish is over another until you put them side by side and taste them. That wasn't the point, Soma, you know it. And then Soma turns on Azon, and he says something that I was hoping that we would get, where he says, you know, you didn't take any time to prepare for this or to practice, which means I haven't gotten the chance to see your specialty yet. So next time, let's have a proper Shokugeki where we both prepare and give it our all. So,
hey, hopefully we'll... glasses back on.
Azon is like, all right, we're done here, yeah. I'm glad that, you know, it's not like, well, Azon's been defeated, he'll never show up again. It's like, no, Azon...
Azon throws his head in the oven afterwards, like, wow, this got really dark. No one's commented on the fact he just murdered himself. He just fucking committed suicide with the camera still rolling. Fucking Yukihira's like, oh man, that chicken was super tasty, wasn't it, guys?
Soma then, speaking of which, grabs one of the cameras before they can pack up and leave. And he's like, oh hey, ladies and gentlemen of Central. Actually, wait a minute, now that I realize I'm on TV, oh, I'm so nervous. I'm such a weirdo. So he gathers himself and says, all right, if you try any funny business with my friends or my dorm mates, I'll make you pay. You may think we're just some inferior nobodies, but we're not going to sit here and let you stare down on your noses at us. You want to pick a fight with us? Fine. We'll take you up on it and we'll give you the thrashing of your lives, even if you send any of the 10 after us.
Dun, dun, dun.
String his big badass pose and his bandage around his wrist is somehow flowing in the wind despite him being indoors and stuff. But, we had some of the Council of Ten reacting to this, specifically the ones that are allied with Azami. So, and then we get a flashback from Rindo's perspective, beginning when she dumped her paperwork on Tsukasa, which is a great way to start the flashback. And then she went to Ishiki, rather than immediately heading to the Shokugeki, and say, hey, you know, your dorm is you at risk here. And Ishiki replied, no, it's not. Because Soma knows that only by pitting dish against dish can you measure the true width of a chef, and given what I know of him, he will easily bring Aizen's little game crumbling down around him. The important part is what comes next. That's when the real fight starts. And it's my job to make sure the right pieces are in place in time. So, yeah, obviously, the problems between Polaris and Azami aren't done. This is only the beginning. Which, it's cool that we have, you know, this, you know, big setup for, like, an ongoing conflict, despite the fact that, you know, at least the dorm is safe for now, type of thing. But, of course, that just means that there's going to be that permanent establishment that Azami is going to want to get rid of. So.
But I do like that the challenge goes out to any of the 10, and you see them responding, or watching, rather. It looks like the one dude doesn't give a fuck. Are you sleeping through it? You see the twitch, so I don't know. But I just like seeing Tsukasa watching and looking serious, because Tsukasa is this interesting, like, number one elite chef. You know, he's the butt monkey for so much of the series. So when he seems like he's serious, it's intriguing. I like the notion of, like, send any of the 10 after us. You're like, oh shit, if fucking a zombie's like, hey, Tsukasa, go close that fucking shitty dorm down.
They are so fucking screwed.
At least at that point.
Aizen, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I like the notion of Ishiki being like, I'm setting pieces up in place. I'm hoping, though, the pieces aren't Polaris Storm, because as cool of an element as that is, Polaris Storm doesn't really have that many interesting characters outside basically our main ones, and I'd much rather see, like, an alliance between, like, oh, Kurikiba and Hayama, and, like, those, like, Alice, like, those characters who have kind of had a little bit more personality added to them than, like, yeah, you're gonna go up against the chick who raises cattle or whatever her thing was. I forget. It's
that
the
guy with the long bangs is being built up as important. You know it.
I think he smokes things, or
he does,
or barbecue sauce. He might be a cowboy.
He was upset that he couldn't smoke things the way he wanted to anymore.
So I kind of hope when he's talking about the pieces in place that maybe it's applying to the larger group, because I think those would be the more interesting characters to follow than just Polaris.
Then Aizen's goons start to pull out, but before they can get all the way out, Soma arrives, and there's this awesome moment where all of Aizen's goons are just backing away from him and letting him through. I like that, you know, it's the cooking manga, but they're scared of him because he beat Aizen. Yeah, it's a cool moment. Crybaby girl cries. This is like her one role in the series, is to cry and be emotional. She hasn't done anything else. I know she's like in the montages where, you know, it's like, oh, the people of Polaris, you know, made it through and stuff, but she never does anything important. We've seen her cook like two or three things, I swear. That's why I don't remember her name. Everyone's all emotional from someone being back and so on and so forth. Some people are reacting in shock, and they're like, yeah, okay, yeah, you know, let's celebrate our victory. But that's the end of the chapter. I like this actually better than I liked last week's chapter, honestly. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a better follow-up to the battle between... It was a great follow-up to the battle between Soma and Aizen. I think it's an actually better conclusion than the conclusion of the Shokugeki was. Because, you know, there's a promise of more to come with the stuff with the Shiki. We get, you know, some great character moments, and I like the way that Soma comes across again in this chapter, because he comes off as a badass, but it seems like he has a very strong direction to him, because he's like, hey, you know, we'll take any of the Council of Ten on, so.
Yeah, I like this chapter more. I liked Yuma, it's fucking Soma's little speech there.
I made some food!
I like that in particular, and I like that there. It seems like we're building up to more, like the little payoff to you weren't at your full power, essentially, Aizen, or just cool stuff there. So I enjoyed this chapter greatly. I thought this was a really good week for Jump in general.
I liked this week's a lot better than last week's, honestly. So, like, I mean, last week Food Wars was my favorite chapter, but I felt it was weak. This week I feel like Food Wars was even better. But it's not my favorite chapter of the week.
Exactly, yeah.
So let's move on to My Hero Academia, number 72, day two of the training. Class B arise in order
to... Holy crap, is this series only at 72 chapters?
Yeah.
And it's games and anime?
Lots happens in My Hero Academia, too.
It's baffling to me. I don't know why. I feel like this manga's been running for, like, another year or two, and then I saw it, I was like, wait, really?
It's crazy popular. So, I mean, yeah. Once that anime hits, it's... So, we get... Class B basically arrives in order to participate in training alongside Class A, but we don't really get too much focus on Class B's students. Basically, we just get this explanation of, you know how when you're working out, you know, you tear your muscle fibers, but then when they regrow and recover, they're thicker and stronger. The same thing applies to quirks. So, you know, if you have an upper limit on how much you can use your quirk, you know, you work up to that limit, so then the next time you'll be able to use it more. If you have, you know, if there is a certain amount your quirk can do, then you push yourself to the limit, so the next time you can do more, and so on and so forth. And we basically just get this montage of the class training. And it's a really weird sight to behold because of how weird some of their quirks are. So, you know, you've got Mineta, and of course his limitation is that if he starts to pull too many globs out of his head, then he starts to bleed. And he's just got this little heel of globs in front of him, and he's bleeding, looking miserable from his head. That's terrifying, by the way. But, you know, like, Todoroki is over, like, sitting in, like, a, you know, one of those weird barrel drum bath things that I've seen in anime, but never in real life. I don't know why.
Because people don't take baths in oil drums. It seems horribly unsafe.
and he's also using his eyes powers and stuff. Yairozu is constantly producing a bunch of items and also eating in order to stay replenished.
It's like a sugar man who's basically just doing biceps while eating cake and coke, which seems like the best training there is. He's like, I just eat a bunch of shit and do bicep curls the entire time next to a super attractive girl? Yeah, that sounds awful.
Don't even have to change my diet or anything like that. I can't tell who's supposed to be in the cave.
Maybe the invisible girl?
Hmm.
I mean, who else would really be an option?
I don't know. I mean, I'd have to see, like, a list of the entire roster or something like that. Because all we see is just the entrance to a cave and a scream coming out from it. That is literally all we get.
Tokoyami, the bird guy?
Maybe, because it's a dark place and his power is, like, his own shadow?
Something like that. Or what's her name? The hearing girl, maybe? Like, she has to hear things.
And that's echoing around her.
What would the invisible girl do to train? Like, what isn't her power just, I am invisible? What does she do to enhance that? Like, I can now make my clothes invisible, too? I mean, wasn't that the point of her costume?
Yeah, that she's naked all the time. I don't know. I have no clue how she would work that. Maybe that'll be explained later. Anyway... The Wild Wild Pussycats in full arrive, not just the two we saw earlier, but the entire group. And what an interesting group they are.
Nick, I feel like we need to cosplay these characters next year. No. I call a tiger.
We're not going to do that. They all wear the same costume!
Yeah, but he gets to have cool makeup and look like a tough dude. He's a real tough dude with those cat paws and miniskirt.
So, you know, it's just like, okay, you know, I'm Ragdoll. I can... you know, keep track of up to 100 people at the same time, including, you know, scanning their location and weaknesses. And then there's Pixie Bob, who was there before. She has the earth powers. Then there's Mandalay, who is a telepath. Or Mandalay? I don't know. And then there's Tiger, who, you know, everyone is like, you know, this is how my ability is going to help you. You know, I can give advice to you all at once. I'll track you all at once. I'll make the battleground for you guys. And Tiger just says, I'll punch and kick you into shape.
Like, does he have powers? No. He just beats the shit out of you. That's terrifying.
So he goes over to Deku, who is doing, like, kind of weird martial arts, you know, type of moves and stuff. And he's like, alright, come at me, you. And Deku tries to launch his Detroit Smash at the guy. And he does this really weird dodge where he bends all the way over. So the punch goes under his waist while he's bending over.
It's so he doesn't get any panty shots, Nick. He's very considerate. Yeah. He's like, look, this isn't that kind of series.
So
I'll break my spine to avoid it.
Tiger then says, "Oh, you're not quite sharp enough yet, which is proof you're not ripping those muscles apart enough." And then he punches Deku in the face.
He not just punches him, he cat punches him. The sound effect literally says, "Cat punch!"
Oh, God. So, yeah, everyone's just like, oh, my God, he's so scary. So Aizawa is says, I don't know if he's actually talking to anyone in particular, but he says, you know, it's like
he's talking to the class, I think, because they do ask, like, or no, because Class B already showed up, and he basically explained, like, yeah, we got the full assortment of the Pussycats here to help, because we can't do that, we couldn't send all of them here, so I think he's just speaking to the class in general, maybe more particularly Class B.
Yeah, he's like, he says, you know, this is the best we can do for you in order to get you stronger in a short period of time. And we have a bit of a moment of introspection from Deku, where, you know, he remembers his training with Gran Torino, and then he says, you know, he thinks, you know, what All Might and Gran Torino gave me, you know, has gotten me this far, but it's all on me in order to progress further from here on. And he, you know, lets out this big, "Aah!" And Tiger's like, "All right, yeah." It's just a small little detail, but it's like, oh, that's cool of Deku to do that. Where it's like, no, I've got to do this on my own kind of thing. And that's why he's acting so determined and weirdly enthusiastic while Tiger is beating the crap out of him. Then we cut to early dinner / late lunchtime, and the Pussycats announce that, hey, if you guys want to eat, you've got to actually make food for yourselves. This is part of your training camp. And Ida has this little moment where he's like, oh, well, I guess in times of disaster and evacuation, someone's going to need to fill the bellies and soothe the souls of fatigued citizens. That, too, is part of rescue operations.
Like, Ida, you're such a fucking prancer.
Oh, yeah, but you know, in that moment, he's
you're
like,
so damn prancy.
He's like, come on, guys, you know, let's do this and work together and so on and so forth. And Aizawa just says, Ida's handy to have around.
He's just such a buzzkill. I feel like if I was in class, I'd be like, oh, shut up. Like, he's the dude who's just like, teacher, you didn't collect homework! Like,
in moments like that, it's like, god damn it, you teacher's pet. But in moments like this, like, okay, you know, this is why he's the class president. Is because he can actually...
He gets
done. He can be that mediator between the students and the teacher by, you know, understanding them and communicating with the class that way. And we get this little brief... bit where they're working together, using their various quirks together in order to create the curry, and in particular to cook the curry. And one of them specifically says, "Bakugo, you can't make fire with your explosion." He's like, "Just watch me."
He's dedication.
Yairozu actually says, "Okay, look, you know, we actually should, you know, learn how to, you know, make fire ourselves and not just rely on Todoroki's quirk in order to get us through this." But Todoroki does, you know, get the fire ready really quickly, and they start to cook the curry and stuff. And it's just this little brief moment, this one panel where Todoroki is just kind of looking kind of calm and at peace. It's not quite a smile, but you can tell he's thinking about it. It's like, oh, he's using his super evil destructive fire powers to actually help out people. So,
and he's made peace with it. He really has. Like, it's not like, oh, my friends are about to die, I'll use my heat powers. It's like, I'll just use them casually.
Yeah. So it's just that one of those nice little moments, you know, that the series is capable of, where it's like, you don't need to explain everything that goes on, Green Blood.
Yeah, it's like, we don't need a prostitute to come in that's like, "I'm it, Todoroki! You're not using your power because you're..."
Why is she British?
She's an immigrant.
"I just got off the Mayflower and be here!
I just came in there to be glowing with the torch on, damn Pip-Pip! Anyway, Todoroki, I do believe that you're not the only person using your firepower! You must have made peace with all your family, witwits!
I couldn't make no money being a lady of the night over in England because people said my voice was too nice, cheerio!
But it's exotic over here, it is! I'm fetching!"
Oh, man. I love doing those voices.
So everyone shouts into their curry. And everyone... someone observes, like, "Man, you sure can eat a lot, Momo." Yayorozu, and she says, well, my quirk converts body fat into stuff, so the more that I eat, the more that I can produce. And someone says, ah, just like poop.
She starts crying. She's just so ashamed.
So Coda is wearing all this, like, ugh, quirks.
Grumpy grump.
He goes up on his own. He goes up to basically his secret clubhouse up on a cliff nearby. And Deku follows after him. He's like, hey, you know, I saw that you didn't eat anything, so I brought your shares. And he's like, how did you know where I was? Well, I followed your footprints. So he's upset that, you know, because he doesn't want to talk with Deku, he doesn't want to talk with any of the students with quirks and stuff, and he's like, go away from my secret base. It's not very secret, considering the company he keeps.
It's also a cliff side, too.
Considering he hangs out with a mountain rescue team, one of them is psychic, the other can keep track of 100 people at once and determine their locations. I'm pretty sure it's not so secret to them. So... Deku, you know, starts asking about, you know, his parents. He's like, you know, was one of them, you know, Water Hose, the hero with the water quirk? And he's like, what did Mandalay tell you about this? He's like, it just kind of, you know, happened. Sorry. You know, poor Deku can't even have, like, the dominant role in a conversation with a 10-year-old.
Oh my god, I feel like this needs to somehow happen in the next World Trigger fanfiction, because it's such a lame thing. Like, oh wow, like a child is fucking dominating me in this conversation. Yeah. Like, I'm like, I'm sorry. He's a child.
Koda goes on complaining for a while. And he's like, oh, you know, you call yourselves heroes and villains, but you're just going around killing each other like idiots. You're just doing this to show off and so on and so forth. And Deku says, you know, a friend of mine, he didn't inherit any quirks from his parents. Oh, my friend. Come on, thank you. He says, but you know, he still admired heroes, but in our society, someone without a quirk can't be a hero. For a while, he just couldn't accept the truth. So he trained. He tried pulling objects telepathically. He tried breathing fire. Everyone views quirks differently. Nothing about them is absolute. But if you keep rejecting everything, you're only going to cause yourself more pain. And, yeah, you get a little bit of a moment to remember how horribly sad and pathetic Deku was before he got his powers and how sad he made me. Because Deku has a really awful crying face, I gotta say.
It's when his mom cries that gets me. It breaks my fucking heart every time.
You know, we just have that one moment where it's like, hey, remember that first chapter where Deku realized he didn't have any powers and he just started crying and she hugged him while crying? It's like,
it's like someone's literally punching my heart, like the vision is phasing through the rest of my body, just like, BOOM! Like, oh!
I thought you didn't like killing people.
He's like, I do when it's podcasters like you. You should have liked the robot. I'm like, why?
But that, you know, Koda is eventually just like, just shut up and leave. And Deku leaves the curry behind and leaves. And we get this brief little moment where Gojo is just kind of grumbling to himself. We cut behind him and to the cliff face, which has this crack in the wall, and also the wall surrounding it is wet. It's got this residue of water on it, which seems to imply that Koda has been using quirks inherited from his parents and has actually been, maybe not training them, but at least unleashing his anger with them. So. And then we cut away from that to people who are preparing to invade the training camp. Apparently they managed to find out about it despite the best efforts of the academy. And it's the offshoots, or the new recruits rather, to the League of Villains. As well as two new figures. One who is wearing a militaristic mask. Yeah, because there's the helmet with, you know, like, stars and stripes on it. Not the, you know, American stars and stripes, but three stars and then three stripes underneath it. And this Darth Vader-looking gas mask. And then there's this one who's a cloaked figure whose face also seems to be obscured by some sort of mask. But, guy who idolizes Stain says that, you know, we're going to fill those heroes full of holes and put them in their place, all for a brighter future. So... Apparently the only thing in this series that can complete if it goes on for any length of time is the tournament arc. How weird. The one thing that is always interrupted in Shonen Battle series.
Went on without a hitch.
And then everything else gets interrupted. You know, gotta go train with heroes, that gets interrupted. Gonna have a special training camp, that gets interrupted. Everything is interrupted in this manga. So,
but I guess that's what makes it fun.
And yeah, we are gonna have we're going to quickly introduce those new recruits and presumably the weaker members of the villains into the battle. So, good stuff.
Now, I don't want to go on for a whole topic about it, but I do just want to note really quick, Nisekoi actually had, I think, a really good chapter this week.
Mm-hmm.
This is 199, sort of a penultimate chapter to 200, which is a big milestone for a lot of series. And it's essentially, like a cute chapter between Raku and Chitoge, but the big thing that happens at the end of it is that Raku is kind of dancing with her on like a Dance Dance Revolution machine, which bothers me because she's wearing heels, and I'm like, how the fuck do you play Dance Dance Revolution in heels that would destroy your fucking ankles? I guess she's that strong. But while he's doing it, he's just thinking about the day they had, and he's thinking about it in relation to how he's feeling, and he starts comparing it. He's like, this is different from the feelings I've had about Tsugumi, about Onodera, about the dying Marika. Chick whose name I can't remember, Marika. And he says it at the end of the chapter, like, he recognizes, like, this is love. And it's, like, a big two-page spread as he's just looking at Chitoge, kind of dancing, having fun. And it, like, it's one of those things, we shouldn't know whenever Bleach does it. It's like, why can't you just put the chapter name at the front? But it's at the very end, on that two-page spread, chapter 199, I think it's Real Love, I think's the name of it, or something like that. It's a very good chapter. I just want to note it as being the fun chapter.
Yeah, it's a big moment, and it's well done, and it's just like, okay, Raku finally got it. But I like the way that it happens. Is it's not, you know, someone's like, hey, how do you feel about Chitoge? It's just like, wow,
it's natural.
Yeah, I really feel good being around this person, even though we don't always get along. You know, she actually makes me feel really happy when we do get along. And then yeah. So it's like, I think I'm in love with her. Boop. So yeah.
I liked it a lot and just wanted to throw that out there.
Let's move on to One Piece, chapter 810, The Twirly Hat Crew Arrives, which opens again with the, you know, people reacting to all the bounties and stuff. This time it's with Sanji's old workplace. Which is nice to see that, you know, he's got his picture on that wanted poster now that they can react to and stuff.
Yeah. I forgot. I don't know, maybe I must have missed it maybe when they did it or just forgot about it. But I love that they replaced the front of the Barati, which used to be a fish, with Sanji's head from the poster. But it's the old one where he looked like a fucking idiot. Like, it was just hand-drawn. And now the new ones come out, they're all laughing at Patty, because he's like, yeah, you have to fucking change it. It's wrong now. He's just like, ah! I had to change this other goofy photo.
So, we continue with the flashback, you know, with the conversation between the Jack's pirate crew and the two emperors on Zou. And Jack converts to his human form, I guess, with his devil fruit. He looks pretty badass, I think.
I would assume so, but it is weird because it seems like he has tusks anyway.
Yeah, well, he's got the horns on his head, and then he's also got tusks, like, I guess, like,
I guess it's probably on his coat.
Battle armor, yeah. He looks really badass, I think. You know, the long braids and the face mask and the tusks and the horns on his head and so on and so forth. And it is confirmed that he uses an elef fruit, an ancient model of it specifically. So that's why let's just remember, the two elephant fruits in this series have been a guy with a $1 billion bounty and some wimp sword. So they fight for a while, and Beppo is actually there, and Beppo says, you know, like, look, I'm not gonna stay out of this fight. You know, I'm a pirate, but this is always going to be my hometown. So the lost pirates that are there help out with the battle and stuff. So it's like, oh, that's a nice little moment. And then we just have a fight for a little while. And then we cut to, I'm not sure who's actually explaining this anymore. Is it Wanda?
I believe it's Wanda. Yeah, I believe it's Wanda, because you see Shishilion is there, but he's kind of like doing...
He's asleep.
He's asleep. I thought he was like doing like the, oh, it's tough to relive it kind of thing. But yeah, I guess he is actually just asleep.
Yeah, it's just hard to track the word bells and stuff, but I mean, Wanda's the only one there who can actually, you know, talking about this. And she says, like, you know, we fought for 5 full days, but we couldn't stop, you know, any reinforcements from arriving by sea. They were like an unstoppable zombie army. But also, you know, there was one place where we couldn't break them down, and that was Jack, for he is truly a monster. And Luffy observes, like, oh, wow, you know, so this guy, your two super awesome emperors couldn't beat Jack, and that guy is just an underling to Kaido, so... And then the thing that toppled the two kings was the poison gas weapon. It took only a second. The killer gas spread through our land with the force of a blast. Who could possibly evade such a thing? The gas swallowed all the city and half of the forest, completely immobilizing us. So, yeah, that shit went down. And then Jack's crew did some pretty awful shit.
Yeah, it's kind of, like, fucked up. They're basically, asking questions they know the answer to just murder people eventually and then torturing the other ones.
Yeah, so, you know, it was like, where's the warrior from Wano? He's not here. Ah!
You're like, and, oh, this is why you have a 1 billion berry bounty, because you're fucked up.
Yeah, so not just, you know, being super intimidating, wrecking towns, but because torture is also on the list.
Torture is on the table for this guy.
Yeah, and she wanted to notes that the strongest were crucified and subjected to torture. And, you know, it got to the point where, like, you know, like, Shishilion was... Not Shishilion, but Doggypine was, you know, begging, look...
Dogstorm.
You don't... Sorry. We don't know anything. you don't need... There's no need for this. This is pure cruelty. And, I forget the tiger's name.
Cat Viper.
He says, you know, I will remember you after death, Jack. Until the day you die dead from a cat's curse. It's pretty awesome. But the torture continued, basically. And eventually, one says, finally, they just either had their fill of destruction or grew tired of hearing the same answer. And so Jack left a few dozen of his men behind and departed. But eventually, you know, they were saved. And it turns out that it was because... We found out what happened when we read Jack's obituary in the paper. For the day that Jack left our land at last was the very day that you defeated Doflamingo. Jack left this place in order to rescue Doflamingo from captivity. They must be bound by some deep connection. In other words, the ones who truly drove that monster from our home were you. And then, by circumstance, that the day after that was when Sanji's group of the Straw Hats arrived to Zoe. And we get basically more detailed explanation of the confrontation that they were having with Jack's pirates that we saw in the way, way, way long ago when the Green Bit arc was still going on. Not Green Bit.
Dressrosa.
Sorry. I like the moment where they're just using Caesar Clown Ore to float up to Zoe.
Oh, it's like the great line of, like, one thing's for sure, I am not going up there. Next panel, damn you! As they're using it as a hot air balloon. You'll rue this day!
That is a great line.
I think we need to make him, like, Caesar Romero. Like, oh, Batman, damn you! Mark my words, you'll rue this day! I love that they turned Caesar Clown into, like...
Just a joke.
He was once a sadistic, child-like, experimenting monster. And now he's, like, goofy comic relief. At this point, I'm like, yeah, sure, let him join the Straw Hats. He could be their lab dude who experiments on kids. Actually, it's fucked up. They can make him the figurehead and the mask so he gets, like, all the fish jump out and slap him in the face. That'd be pretty funny.
So they came across Wanda being pursued by Jack's men and decided to help her out. And we get this moment of Brook getting to be badass using his Soul Parade powers in order to make the ground freeze and trip up the bad guys and stuff. And then they continued to chase after Wanda, who was still running away, and followed her back to, you know, the village, and saw the people, you know, it's like, oh my god, you know, they're choking with gas and so on and so forth. And originally the Straw Hats were just going to leave because they didn't want to be, you know, taken down by the gas. But then they heard, I believe, Shishilian calling out to them and saying, oh no, not Shishilian, he says his name, though. He says, you know, my name is Pedro, and I beg you to, you know, see to Duke Dogstorm and the Cat Viper before they die. The world awaits them. They must be saved. They must not die under any circumstances. We care over them. And revealed that Jack actually cut off Dogstorm's leg and cut off Cat Viper's arm.
That's so fucked up. Like, why? Yeah. Like, it's so, like, that's so jacked up.
So, yeah, I mean, because, you know, we've only seen in the present Dogstorm in bed to this point. So his leg's been obscured the whole time. So it's quite a shocking scene to see this incredibly gruesome injury in, you know, happen to, you know, One Piece characters, because it happens every now and then, but this is freaking hardcore. They've just been hanging there with a limb missing each for a day.
Yeah.
So
I mean, yeah. This is One Piece. Flashbacks usually don't end sad, so, or don't end happy, so this is sort of on a similar vein of kind of like, oh, that's kind of dark. Like,
both. Also, Chopper's wearing a football helmet.
Yeah, well, you know, Chopper's, he's eclectic like that. it's worth it. It's kind of nice because it's the first time I've really seen Sanji in a while, and I just want to kind of throw this out there that Jump Fiesta, I believe it was Oda's editor, was interviewed and made the note that, I guess, Oda said, like, don't worry, like, I haven't forgot Sanji. 2016 is going to be the year of Sanji, so you're going to get some of him.
Wow.
I know some people are like, oh, I don't know, that's too much. I think it's like how Nintendo was like, yeah, it's going to be the year of Luigi. We're just going to get a couple of scenes pertaining to Sanji that are going to kind of make up for the fact that he was missing from the Dressrosa arc and things like that. So
weren't there like two Luigi games?
There were like three, but yeah, it wasn't like they went overboard.
No one really remembers those games either.
Yeah, it's like Luigi's Mansion 2, I think there's a Luigi Mario game, and or Mario games Luigi was in, does that count? Yeah. But I like this chapter a lot. This is immensely, I think this is what this arc needed for me to kind of get invested in it, because now I've got a grasp of how this country works. I can understand its logic, the people involved. Jack is horrifying now. Like that's a fucking bad guy. I see it, you know.
Also, who killed him?
Yeah, well, the Marines did, but I he cannot be dead. Like, I know they wrote an obituary for him, but you don't introduce a character with that big of a bounty, make that big of a deal about it, give him an ancient Zoan fruit just to be like, oh, we killed him off screen before you really saw the extent of what he can do. I'm sure he'll come back in some manner. But I like what this did of kind of building up this world. It's nice seeing a little bit of context, that kind of out of context scene we saw of Sanji's group a while back. And it's added a lot more context into Dogstorm and Cat Viper to kind of make the sacrifice that they've unintentionally, and not willing, but they've had happen to them a lot more impactful. And I'm still really invested in Zoe, kind of waiting to see where this arc goes. Because I don't necessarily know if, like, the people he left behind are supposed to be our primary antagonist. It might just be a small arc, and maybe it's not going to be, like, a big opponent or anything like that. But it really is, like, a very entertaining story now, and I think this flashback served to really add the necessary context to making Zoe an intriguing world now.
Yeah, the, this chapter, I think, really helped elevate this arc, because, I mean, before this point, I was just like, okay, you know, there's these animal people and stuff, whatever. And then eventually you see them getting tortured and so on and so forth, and you're like, wow, this Jack guy's an asshole. And you get the impression, yeah, okay, this is why the Straw Hats are welcomed so much. And then you see that final two-page spread of Cat Viper and Dogstorm just completely maimed, brutalized, and it really does make a big impact to close out the chapter. So yeah,
a great Christmas chapter. really great for the holidays.
Oh, Christmas is all about, you know, the spirit of giving and chopping off limbs.
Fuck that dog.
Let's move on to Toriko Gourmet 352. Back.
It should just Everyone's be back. Called Toriko Shits on its own story for the past 6 weeks. It
really does. Unimportant stuff happens for a lot of this, honestly. just people saying like, oh yeah, we're grateful to you, Komatsu, because things work differently here in this place you're never going to return to. You know, we understand our memories now, stuff like that. A chef... There's a Yuri joke in here. And I'm trying to remember if the girl who is blushing over Milk the Second was ever in this arc.
I feel like she is, but I don't know who she is at all.
Yeah, she's...
It's
she's
one of those, like, 19 fucking characters who shows up from time to time in the story as, like, a... It's, like, her and the dude with, like, the robot eye. Like, I know they're characters. I see them from time to time. I don't know who it is. I don't know.
So you have this little moment where she is like, you know, oh, you know, it's been so long, but I remember so many things I've forgotten. I think I'll try falling in love. And she looks over at Milk, and Milk goes, I'm a... She's like, wait, you're a girl? I mean, not that I mind. It's like, okay, wow, I managed to, like, get two of the five female characters in Toriko. And it's like, and also they're gonna be lesbians now, maybe. I don't know. I guess that does really, really easily take care of the point I keep raising. It's like, isn't Milk supposed to be one of Komatsu's love interests? Not anymore! She has her own weird love interest now.
It's just Momo, Nick. That's the one he's meant for.
Or No-No.
Or No-No. Whatever the fuck her name is.
Whatever her name is. She hasn't done anything before.
She beat one of the five chefs. She beat someone on the level of Condor Window, I'll have you know.
We didn't see her do it. Maybe she killed that guy, too.
But he lives afterwards, so everyone can get his autograph. That'd be great. Just her all, like, meek and shit. Like, oh, excuse me, sir. You might want to watch out. Why is that? Because I used my powers to position your oven above your head. Ah! It just gets crushed by it and roasted alive in it. She's just like, bitch, don't fuck with No-No.
She does, like, gang signs.
Yeah, she's like, hey, Saida. You're like, what? This is terrifying.
It's all in the game, motherfucker.
If you don't, you can't lose if you don't play the game. You're gonna come at the king. You best not miss, bae. You're like, oh, man. This is so creepy, but I love these Wire references.
Give me my magazines, motherfucker!
Oh, yeah, I'll cop to a few more murders for a po' boy and a strawberry soda. Like, what a weird thing for you to chef to want.
I literally just watched that episode yesterday. Does it have to be strawberry? Yeah.
I love it. He's just like, yeah, I'll cop to some more murders for a po' boy and a strawberry soda. Like, oh, that sounds disgusting beyond words.
Odd combination. Anyhow, we bring it all home, wrap up this entire pointless arc. Not pointless, but excessively long and weird arc with Chaco asking Komatsu for his autograph finally, because he actually respects him as a chef now. All it took was fucking rescuing his mother from the underworld. And Komatsu leaves, and he's like, ah, oh, alright, well, thank you, Blue Grill. Bye. And then we did this explanation of how Dawn Slime works, because, like, oh, he couldn't have just, you know, joined his cells with anyone. It had to be someone who already had his gourmet cells inside them. But it turns out that everyone in Blue Grill has his cells inside them. That's why he was able to use the Sardi. That's why he was, like, worshipped as a god in Blue Grill, blah, 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 blah. 3-page-long explanation of all this stuff. And now everyone is, like, free from the spirits. The chefs that were part of Komatsu's group that were possessed by spirits are fine now. Okay. And then finally, we get this great moment where everyone is like, oh my god, all the aging we did is suddenly catching up to us at once. And also, we've got walking sticks to make an old people joke. We'll be fine in a little while. And then everyone recovers.
Like, they're like, it takes 3 weeks now for you to recover. So that's why 6 weeks later, everybody looks like the way they did.
Right. They've got long hair and shit. So they come back up. They're fine now. And so Komatsu ends the flashback and says, and there you have it, Toriko! We're heading for you now! You hear us, Toriko? And Toriko says, that explanation, flashback, took forever! You guys have gone through stuff that defies all logic! But I don't really care, so let's get here quick, Komatsu!
Like, and he's still, like, there's, like, world, like, winds and shit, so you think he's still in the battle with the Battle Wolf at this point?
Yes! Because Midora is still fighting Froze! Or not Froze, Joey! And the Blue Nitro are still getting ready to sit out!
Oh, man, it's fucking great.
It's like, hey, I'm sorry that I bought myself time for literally 3 months with that pointless sidebar, but we're back to the action now. Toriko is so fucked up right now.
The only way it could be better, like, the only way this same situation could have been better is if during the fake Karakura Town arc, somebody was just like, holy shit, that back the pendulum thing took forever, but now we can fight!
Oh, God. Maybe important stuff will happen in Toriko next year.
I mean, a lot of important stuff happened, but it was just a lot of exposition to get there.
Oh, so much expositing and so much, like, weird cutaways from action and stuff. I literally had forgotten that Midora and Joey's fight was still going on. I assumed that when we cut back to that, it would have been done, or one of them would have run away. I never would have thought that months would go by in this flashback. We would come back and Midora's like, so I destroy all your beads yet? Okay.
Now the real fight begins.
Such a stupid chapter. But it's done. The flashback arc is done. Finally. Let's just move on. I got nothing more to say about it.
I feel you, Nick.
Mertrigger! Chapter 125, Galapagos.
Look, you're not the one who has to fucking Christopher Walken, the dude who says everybody's names later, so you can't get tongue-tied over this, alright?
Galapaula, part 4. We open with Yotaro awakening and realizing that Husei is gone, but immediately cut away from that into Border, which of course has been infiltrated by the members of Galapaula's group. And we see them, like, closing up the bulkheads in order to, you know, keep them from getting anywhere. And basically, like, the blast doors in the Star Wars corridor seal up. And there's this sign at the top that says, keep out. And the one underneath it says, wet floor.
What does that mean, keep out, wet floor?
If, like, you go inside this area, you'll slip.
Yeah, if you break into this double steel door...
I have no idea. Why would you put that on a freaking bulkhead?
This is a tangent, but this is just to remind me of it. I had a science teacher my freshman year he thought it was the wisest thing he had ever... Like, he thought he'd blown every student's mind when he's like, you know, like, when you go to the mall and you go to a store and there's a sign that says, no pets allowed. Except underneath, it says, except for service dogs. Why bother having that? Because the people with the service dogs are blind and can't read. And he just, like, waited for all of our minds to collectively explode out of our heads. Like, holy shit! You're right! This world is bullshit! Everyone was just like, I mean, someone can still tell them.
There are service dogs that aren't seeing eye dogs.
Yeah. Or those people who are like, hey, you know, I have someone here to tell me, like, yeah, this dog's okay to have here, or something like that.
Right, yeah. Or, you know, someone can be like, hey, what's that dog doing there? Oh, wait, it's a service dog. Oh, there are so many explanations for that!
He really thought he'd, like, this is the same teacher who did the albatross joke, which I think I've told you guys before.
I don't remember it.
He liked hypotheticals. And he's like, I've got the queen and the king. And the queen was something stupid. I can't even remember the queen. But it was like, it's supposed to be like the question, like, a man is hanging from the roof and there's a puddle of water beneath his feet. What happened? And you're like, oh, he's still in a block of ice and then waited for it to melt to hang himself. Like, that's like the thing. He's like, this is the king. So you have to figure out what happened here. A man goes into a restaurant and orders albatross soup. He takes one sip of it. Then he puts the thing, he puts the spoon down, walks outside, and kills himself. Why? You can give me as many answers as you want, Nick. You're going to need an hour and a half just to ask all the fucking necessary questions you need to figure out the real answer to this stupid-ass riddle. It was seriously like an hour and a half of asking questions to him to figure out, oh, okay, so this man was actually a sailor who was on a boat with his brother and a bunch of other people that crashed on an island, and the brother was really injured, but it turns out the injury was essentially going to be lethal. But the other people on the boat didn't want the brother to know. Basically, they killed him because they were running out of food. So they told the one brother, you know, here's your food, but they didn't want him to know it's his brother, so they told him it was albatross soup. But the brother had his suspicions that death wasn't natural. So he goes...
The taste isn't the same. Yeah. He realized he ate his brother, and that's why he killed him.
But with the information I fucking gave you, could you have deduced any of that shit?
No!
And he's like acting, he's like, this is the king of riddles. I'm like, this is the bullshit of riddles. There's no way you figure this out.
A riddle gives the information necessary to solve it.
Like, and he acted like we were the idiots. Like, what, you didn't get this? I was like, no! I didn't get the fucking season of television I would have had to watch to understand your fucking riddle.
Oh, no. That's, anyway. Yeah, that's like something that you have to like put in chapter 1 and then it's explained in chapter 80 or something like that.
So it's like 3 arcs later we figure it out. Like, oh, his brother is Albatross. He ate it. Okay, I get it now. This was not worth the time to get here.
So we are introduced to the most of the important members of the Galapala away team. The leader is Ratarikov. The sub-leader is Koskero. Then the member
that is... Oh, you
don't
want me to read him, Nick? We decided on having Christopher Walken for the main guy.
I haven't said any of their lines yet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Then the member that is with them is Reginditz, I guess. And essentially their operator is Yomi. Thank you for that one. I can pronounce lawyer names easily.
I like Wen Saw. That one seems easy. I'm never going to remember these characters' names. I hope they are one-art characters, because this is never going to happen. But he's just like, we'll take the shortest route and avoid engaging enemies if possible. If anyone comes after us, Wen, she'll stop them. She has shields. That's what she does.
And then there's Gatlin is their captain.
Gatlin, and that one dude that I'm talking, Rata, that's totally my kid. I'm calling it. I know I'm in character at the moment, so if I was, I would just say whether or not that's my kid.
They do have, like, the exact same hairstyle. So.
Yeah, they look very similar. And he's just like, Reggie and... Reggie and... Those dudes will draw the mean soldiers to them. And Yomi, you're there. Don't fuck anything up. It's the one job that I am giving you. Don't fuck anything up.
And there is a girl with Gatlin named Winsaw.
Yeah. I like Winsaw. That's an easy name. Yeah, I'm never going to remember it because it's weird. But Winsaw is an easy name to pronounce.
So Jin intercepts them. And he's got Fujin with him. Again, suddenly.
I guess they gave him permission to use it.
Right.
For this,
he tries to attack them, but they manage to all get up shields in order to protect themselves from the blades popping up from the walls and the floor and stuff. And then they escape through a portal into, essentially, it looks like a library, basically. Or, I don't know, an archive room of some sort. So Jin realizes, Aptek Rotora must have informed them about using Fujin. But he says, but now I've seen them. Which I guess indicates he needs to have seen someone in order to use his powers on.
Yeah, that's how he does it. If he looks at somebody, he can see their future. And that's why I was like, I'm not seeing anything from people in town, anything bad happening to them. I'm not seeing much from a lot of our agents. So it's meant to imply like he needs to actually see somebody to see what their future is, and because he's seen them now, he's like, they're going for the away mission ship.
Right. So he immediately contacts command, and it's like, we need to protect them, and so on and so forth. One of the people in command is just like, well, if they can use triggers to slip through walls and stuff, then how are we going to stop them? And someone else is like, well, they would have just tunneled all the way to the, you know, the ship, the away ship, if they could. But there are obviously limitations to it because they've actually gone through the hallways and so on and so forth. So there is a limit, and we can intercept them still. And we get to Ko? The kid with the...
Amo.
And he's explaining, like, oh.
Nick's dog, and he just pops up. He's like, it's Amo, Nick! He licks you.
It's my cats, actually.
Oh, fuck your cats.
Fuck you. Amo says that most of the humanoid soldiers are like, okay, you know, like, they're like lower B-rank agents, but if they group up together, then their color changes. So they actually combine the powers really well. The dogs aren't very powerful. The intruders have nice colors, A-rank or above, especially the guy with the beard. He's similar to Mr. Shinoda in color coding. He's got, like, this whole, like, hexadecimal color system that worked out in his head or something like that.
It is, that is like a huge deal though, being like, oh, he's like on Mr. Shinoda's level. I'm assuming that's the character who probably is going to be the one that Tachikawa gets in a fight with and is a danger to him. Because Mr. Shinoda has basically been stated as being like, I'm the strongest person within Border. I'm part of like our, you know, council, so I don't go out into the field. But when shit got real during the invasion arc, that was when he's like, I'm going to get out there and handle this shit now. Like, we, you know,
and he kicked ass.
Yeah.
So
someone on his level is pretty crazy.
Right. And it makes sense because, you know, he is the grizzled war veteran, obviously. Looking at them, he's got the scars and so on and so forth. And he's also the intelligent one amongst Galapalo. So.
And if that is his kid, maybe something bad happens to his kid. Maybe that's why he goes all out and puts a danger on Tachikawa.
Maybe he goes berserk and forgets the mission or something like that. Yeah. So they relay commands and so on and so forth. It's like, okay, look, you know, we can't reduce the outside forces. We'll use personnel inside in order to stop the intruders. So then we cut outside, and while Shinoda thinks to himself, you know, it's worrying not knowing what the enemy triggers are, but three intruders are just too few. There must be a neighbor directing the Trion soldiers from the outside.
Which I don't know who that's meant to be, unless he's implying the other country. Because we know we've seen everybody within Galapolo, at least everybody they've introduced us to. But we know that the other country just sent robots, like they just sent the Trion soldiers. So
maybe they're being remotely controlled somehow. Maybe they somehow granted control to Galapolo. So I don't know. So a bunch of people, you know, arrive on the scene to help out. Tsuji and Shun and so on and so forth, and Yone as well, Scruffiotti starts to take control, and he's like, "All right, you guys aim down below. I'll take care of the attackers, and Arafune and I are gonna take care of the dogs, and you know, just basically regroups the troops and so on." Then we go back inside to where the intruders are trying to evade Border soldiers, and Windsaw decides to split off from the other two in order to stop the people pursuing them, and it turns out that it's Nasu Squad who are chasing after. Well, yeah, because their sniper is outside. So, she summons more dogs in order to help her to fight them. And then we go outside again.
Cat fight Nick, like she even says, like, come on, little girls. I'm thinking back to that Fox Kids promo for Lady Devimon versus Angelamon. Like, oh, I'll take this party now! Like, I imagine, like, they have laser weapons and special, like, swords that cut through people. I'm still imagining it devolving into, like, these three tossing over each other, pulling on air, like, like, wow, you guys really went with the low common denominator on this one.
Miwa squad starts to come into the scene, and he notes that Yunea is coming after him. He doesn't know who Yunea is, but he's like, oh, I got spotted by a tough one. So it seems as though Kosukero and Yunea are gonna throw it down now.
They did know that Yunea is tough though, because he was one of the people they spotted taking down some of the advanced troops they sent down. They noted, like, oh, that guy with the spear is a tough guy, so...
Right.
Kind of interesting.
But yeah, that's where we're triggering. It's really more preamble before getting into the main conflict, but I do like... We essentially have, like, three different things sort of going on right now. We've got the battle inside Border, we've got the battle outside of Border, and we've got the rank wars, which you haven't even seen any of yet, and maybe we won't, actually.
That'd be great. We just cut afterwards, and the song was like, I scored 17 points, guys! And everyone's like, what the... Like, Annalise is just crying, because she's like, I'm so happy, but I didn't get to see any of it! Or worse, it gets to the end, and the song was like, I died again in 10 seconds. And you're like, oh, the spider didn't do anything. I killed myself activating my own spider. It's like, which end does it come out of? Oh no! What a tragic way for this to end.
Yeah, that's it for Winter, and that's it for the recap, I guess.
Yes.
So let's go over our favorites for this week. The chat room has decided that One Piece is the favorite chapter of the week, which I think is not a bad choice. My series of the week is actually Nisekoi. We didn't talk about it for very long, but I thought that it was a very, you know, important chapter, and I thought it was a very effective chapter to demonstrate, you know, why Raku realized the way he feels. And I like the way, I like a lot of the writing in the chapter. The way that he kind of goes through the process of realizing how he thinks of Chitoge and how he feels about her and stuff. And also, it is a really cool final note to leave on, where he's just like, I think this is love, and he's just looking at her and stuff. So, good stuff. Also, some funny bits at the beginning when they're in the photo booth, too. So.
I can completely understand that. I'm actually in line with the chat, though. I have my One Piece. One Piece was my chapter of the week, this one. I just think this was a great chapter to kind of get us into the arc, get me excited for it. And this is kind of like the chapter needed to get me invested, so... I think it was a tough week. I think there were great options across the board, but the one I went with was One Piece. I think that was the one that kind of gave me the most.
I think One Piece would have been my runner-up, honestly. So. And in terms of weekly MVPs, I also struggle on this one because there are a lot of cool moments from different characters in this, but I feel like giving it to Soma again, honestly, because...
Oh, man, Soma's going to be like a year MVP.
He just comes off as such a badass. I just love that moment where he just comes through the gates and he's like, oh, yeah, I won. And all of Bazon's goons are just backing away from him. He's a cook! He's not going to hurt you, but they're scared of him.
They're like, oh, so let's get out of here. This tough dude's coming. Tough dude!
Also, it's a really awesome speech that he gives. So.
Nah, I can completely understand that. I actually give mine, though, to Raku from Nisekoi. I think it was... this was tough, because I had a couple characters I was considering. I was actually almost going to break the rule and be like, Dog, Storm, and Cat Viper, two MVPs! Soma was
what
awesome.
What you gonna do about it?
Yeah, what you gonna do, Nick? I'm over here, PA! You can't touch me! You can't see me, Nick! You can't see me!
That's Boston.
It's a lot of things that aren't blending together, but it's becoming my character now. No, I was considering them, I was considering Soma, I was considering Deku even. But I just went with Raku because I feel like this is such a huge moment. And all those other characters I feel like are going to have moments, or, you know, Dog, Storm, and Cat Viper, you know, maybe we'll see what happens to them. But this should be maybe one of the moments for Raku. Like, this felt huge. Like, Nisekoi doesn't often have two-page spreads. The fact that they did, and it's him actually realizing it, and you're like, oh shit, will this put an end to the will they, won't they? Like, is this actually going to progress things in that relationship?
Probably not.
Probably, like, next chapter he gets, like, fucking a boot to the head, and he's like, well, I just like this
guy. I don't know what happened the last 5 minutes in 5 minutes alone.
I remember everything else, but no, I liked it a lot, and I thought it was extremely impactful, so that's why I kind of give it to her.
It's obviously a moment that's meant to be very important, and it feels really important, so yeah. It's an important moment that was executed well. This is probably, like, when the series is over, that's probably going to be one of those moments you look back on and remember how it led up to the ending and stuff. So, but yeah, with that said, that is going to do it for Weekly Manga Recap. I'd like to thank everyone who joined us for the live recording of the show here on hitbox.tv/RoloT. We record the show Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, though sometimes we do need to change it up. So to stay updated on that stuff, you can follow us on Twitter. He's at RoloT, I'm at YRuler of Time, and you can also follow the @WMRPodcast Twitter for official manga-related news and stuff. You can also check out our past episodes on
Weekly Manga Recap. Music playing in my head.
Okay. You can also check out our past episodes on weeklymangarecap.podbean.com. Also, subscribe to us on iTunes, and make sure to leave a comment and a rating so that we can beat the woodworkers.
Oh, yeah. Special thanks, by the way, to Gunblade007, who says, very fun, I've been following the series for back when I was on thatguythatglasses.com. And he says, I'm a lumberjack. So thank you to Gunblade for your review. It is only because of people like you, Gunblade, that we're able to even stand in a fight. At this point, we're class A. We're training. We're stretching our quirks as far as we can. But the League of Villains is up on that cliff. They're called Woodworker Podcasts. They are bearing down on us, ready to strike. We need your help. You are our tiger of the Pussycat Dolls. Or whatever their fucking names were, I forgot. The Pussycats. You are a tiger who are strengthening us. Just fucking write the review, alright? I don't need to go on with this analogy. You get it. Write the goddamn review for people.
If you're watching this video, presumably you're watching it through our YouTube page. But yeah, make sure to subscribe to that. We don't have a shortened channel name yet, so you're gonna have to like do a search for us, but we'll hopefully get that up in a couple of months. Also be sure to send us criticism, ask us questions, and suggest future manga for us to read. Send all that stuff to our email, weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com. Special thanks go out to all of our Patreon supporters, because your support allows us to create all sorts of bonus content for you guys to enjoy.
Yes, particularly. I don't know what that word was.
Particularly.
What was I combining particularly with? I guess specifically.
Probably special.
I guess specifically and particularly at the same time. Particularly to the legendary pugilist, who is our most recent patron. So thank you very much, everybody. He's the legendary pugilist too. So. Not just my regular one.
And finally, thanks go to Steelman, who's our title colorist, to Felix Stark, who does visual editions of our show, and Infamous Planet, who does all sorts of stuff. He does, visual editions, and he also made this whole format thing that we use for the streams and stuff like that. So thanks to all you guys for helping us out with this stuff.
Oh, I want him to post another image. It's like, he's the Infamous Planet! And you're like, he didn't say it this time.
I'm gonna have to, like, prompt you if you get it ready. Do you have one?
Nah, Infamous? Doesn't seem like he does.
Oh, no. I'm gonna have to start going back to you.
Oh, that's your thing? You're like, you need to have a new image every week?
You have to have one ready. You have to, like, criticize me for using the... unless I actually use...
Oh, wait. Something's loading.
Right, here it is.
Wait, there you go.
Objection. His channel is renamed to Infamous Planet for branding purposes. That's good. I like that one. All right.
There you go. All right. You survive one more week.
Yeah. We're going to use that "the" on you, though. Anyhow, that is going to do it for Weekly Manga Recap. Chris, do we have a suggestion for next time ready?
Yes. Well, guys, as you know, there's no Jump next week. And because of that, there probably won't be a Weekly Manga Recap next week. I don't know if we might do something else instead. It's yet to be decided. But essentially, there won't be a regular episode. So this is essentially the first recommendation for 2016. And because of that, I figured it'd be time to announce something that we're going to be doing throughout 2016, a special event, so to speak. So there are two series that one of us each has read that are long-running, but are kind of divided into parts. So our plan is to kind of do some of these parts as recommendations to catch each other up on it, and that's why our next one is going to be JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Part 1, Phantom Blood. And by the end of this, I believe we'll see where we can get on catching Nick up with JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. So stay tuned for that. And that's actually a pretty short one. That's only a couple volumes, so I don't think that one will take us too long to do.
Yeah, so we'll probably do it pretty early in January then.
Yeah. Now, just note, guys, it's not going to be like back to back. These are going to be spaced out throughout the year, but just note.
I might hate JoJo by the end of it.
Yeah, if we do too much too quickly, Nick's going to go crazy. He's like, there's so many stands! And I'm like, Nick, there's not even stands in these first two parts. The first part barely is anything. It's like magic punches or something.
All right, that's our plan going forward. So, I guess that's it for pretty much this year of Weekly Manga Recap. We will do our annual recap.
That's usually the first of the year we do that, I think.
We'll fit it into one of these 2 weeks without Jump.
That is true. I guess technically we could do it next week, but...
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know.
Who knows? I might be too lazy. I'm just, like, in my bed. Like, I'm right here. We're still recording, but I'm still just laying in bed. Like, let's not do anything. Let's just...
What's talking about Maya? It's too long.
Like, my clothes just slowly being ripped off and thrown to the side. You're like, hey, Chris, turn off your camera. I'm like, eh.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm a sleep stripper.
Yeah, that's what I do. I'm like gray when I... Ugh. Lost my headphone there. I can't hear you anymore if you're talking to me, Nick. Goodbye, everybody.